listening to Coast AM with Art Bell. Listeners west of the Rockies can call Art toll-free by dialing 1-800-618-8255. If you're east of the Rockies, the toll-free number is 800-825-5033. If you've never called Art before, you may use the first-time caller line at area code 702-727-1222. And the wild card line is area code 702-727-1295. When you get through, let it ring, and Art will answer your call in order on the air. This is the CBC Radio Network.
From the high desert and the great American Southwest, I bid you all good evening or good morning, as the case may be, across this great land, stretching from the Hawaiian and Tahitian Islands out west, eastward to the Caribbean and the U.S. Virgin Islands, south into South America, north all the way to the pole, and worldwide on the Internet. This, of course, is Coast to Coast AM, and I'm Art Bell. Glad to be here. Back from France now for a couple of nights. Night number two. Mike, listening to KWON, writes, welcome back. What was your most memorable meal in France? Details, please. Oh, how exciting. Says, don't tell me you ate at McDonald's and Taco Bell too often. Not once, actually. Despite the gigantic temptation. Since you asked about food, Mike, I'm a carnivore. I'm a meat eater, and I like steak, and I like hamburger, and I like meat of all sorts. And the French don't have a clue about cooking meat. I mean, they don't have a clue, Mike. Meat is great, but it is supposed to be cooked. I don't want remnants of red. And I became convinced, in my first stay in France, and now my second stay in France, that there is a religious prohibition against chefs cooking meat into completion. No matter how you beg them, no matter how you send it back, no matter how you say, no roche, no red, it doesn't matter. They won't do it. They can't do it. It's not in their French souls to do it. They can't cook meat, Mike. So remember that if you ever go to France. Mike writes, and also it was a pleasant surprise to be able to smoke without feeling like a criminal. Yes, indeed. Now, Air France, which had allowed smoking on, you know, some parts of the airplane, during my last trip, this time, unfortunately, a short while before I left for France, I decided, I think under pressure from the U.S., that all flights to and from the U.S. would now be no smoking flights. Air France still, to other destinations, allows smoking. Not to the U.S. Why? Because we put pressure on them. Now, when you get to the international airport, Charles de Gaulle International Airport in France, you can smoke. When you walk off the airplane, there are everywhere ashtrays. You can smoke. Now, the U.S. has gone a little bit overboard on things, Mike. And so, yes, in a lot of ways, depending, I guess, on how you view that question, the French have a higher state of civilization. On the other hand, as is evidenced by what's written on my website, France is a small country in Central Europe which thinks of itself in a greater way than it ought to. And the French people do, and they have an attitude, you know, but that's all right. Actually, Americans have attitude, too. We are a country with an attitude. And Brazil is also a country with an attitude tonight. I watched the game in its entirety. I have become a convert to soccer, what they call football, what we call soccer. And it was a very exciting game. Brazil beat the Netherlands in penalty shootouts at the very end of the game. It was very exciting. Now, tomorrow, or some time zones later today, the other playoff will occur, and that will be between France and Croatia. Now, Croatia is an incredible surprise. They were the bottom of the list. We're there now, by the way. The U.S. is not exactly a soccer country. And we sure proved it in this World Cup. But Croatia, that was at the end of the list, a place now occupied by us, is in the finals. They're playing the host country, France, tomorrow in my time zone. And then the winner of that match is going to play Brazil. And I'll tell you this. If it comes, I think Croatia is going to do well, but I wouldn't predict they'll beat France. So it'll come down to France and Brazil. Should France win, Paris is going to come apart. I'm telling you right now, over there, soccer is life. Life is soccer. And the match is going to be played in Paris, the final of the World Cup. And if the host country, France, wins, Paris is flat going to come apart. It's going to be interesting to watch. The Croatians are upstarts, and you never know. They might beat France, in which case the French would go quietly sulking back to their flats. It is as important, soccer is, to the French as, and to the Europeans and South, and actually to the rest of the world, as football, NFL football, is to us. Terry Nichols is not going to get a new trial. Clinton has endorsed a gun access bill. Now, what does that mean? Well, it means there will be a law that says there's a terribly stiff criminal penalty on any of you adults out there who don't store your guns safely and it ends up being used by a child to harm someone. A federal law? A federal law, that means if a child gets hold of a parent's gun and does something terrible with it, it would be a federal violation of law and the FBI would come in? Doesn't seem like a place where the federal government ought to be. What do you think? And there is a story this night about blacks and nicotine, saying that blacks seem to, according to Reuters, absorb nicotine more readily than whites, so they have a harder time kicking the habit. Of course, it is controversial, so we'll see. Japan, you should take note, is beginning to build a very strong space program. As a matter of fact, the Japanese launched a probe to Mars over the weekend. Isn't that interesting? Why would the Japanese? I was puzzling about this before I left, and now they have done it. Now, let's get this straight. The U.S. and Russia have both sent probes to Mars, with albeit some limited success and some good success. We've had a probe down on the ground running around like a little child's tractor toy, examining Scooby-Doo and other childish rocks. But what puzzles me here is, why would Japan, particularly economically stretched right now, why would they launch a probe to Mars? What could they learn about Mars that we don't already know? What pictures could they take of Mars that we have not already taken? What rock could they bump into that we have not already bumped into? Why are the Japanese going to Mars? Let me tell you something else. The Japanese are also prepared to begin a manned space program. That's right, a manned space program. The Japanese. They are indeed aiming for human spaceflight. Now, what's going on there? Interesting, huh? I think very, very interesting. Here's a fax from David, a corporal, and he writes, "Dear Art, a while back someone told you that it was about 140 degrees in the Middle East. I heard you had a hard time believing that. I am a U.S. Marine, and I just got back from Kuwait. Guess what? It was 148 degrees Fahrenheit on the hottest day. Whoever called you was telling the absolute truth." Can you imagine that? 148 degrees. Holy smokes. By the way, coming up next hour is Neil Slade. And you know what we're going to talk about along with other things? We're going to talk about weather control, cloud busting, actually controlling cloud formations, and or the weather with your brain. We may even try some sort of mass experiment tonight. We'll see. But Neil Slade, as a matter of fact, claims that he has done this. Not that it might be able to be done, or that it can be done, or that we might be able to do it, but that he has already done it, has proof. And it's on his website. So if you want to see it, go take a look. You'll see the link. The way you get to it is you go to my website, www.artbell.com. Scroll down into the guest area. You'll see the name Neil Slade there. Click on it. Go take a look. Very, very, very interesting, I would say. So, there you have it, folks. That's what's coming up tonight. I've got a lot more material here, and we will get to it as we are able to. I am not going to stop puzzling over this Japanese space program for some time. Isn't it curious, don't you think? They're cranking up a major space program now. It's going to become a manned program at a time when they, too, are supposed to be ponying up money, which I guess they will, for the International Space Station. But parallel with that, they have begun their own very serious space program. They just, over the weekend, launched a probe to Mars, which to me is a total puzzle. I wonder if they're going to share the information they get with us. Why would they financially stressed right now, be launching probes to Mars and be talking about sending men to Mars? I'm telling you, it's a strange one. But the world is strange right now, isn't it? East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Good morning.
Yes, hi, good morning. This is Steve calling from Ann Arbor, Michigan. How are you?
Oh, just fine.
Good. Just calling to let you know that Howard Stern rules. Wooloo, cuckoo, lulu, baba booey, baba booey.
That it?
Howard's a man. Wooloo, cuckoo, lulu.
Is that language he understands?
It is. You know, you're lucky you're not on in the morning, or Howie'd kick your ass.
I am on in the morning.
Well, when Howard's on, he's great. He's a king. He should be president.
Really?
Yeah.
How do you think that would make the presidency any different than it is right now?
Probably not by much, but...
Yeah. I listen to Howard, I know. I gotta go.
Yeah.
Oh, well, at least he started my program out on the right note this morning. On the international line, you're on the air. Good morning.
Good morning, Art.
Extinguish your radio.
Yeah, just got it.
That's good. Where are you calling from?
Regina, Saskatchewan.
Regina, Saskatchewan. All right.
Yeah.
So what's going on?
Had a bunch of rain the last 2 weeks.
What do you think the temperature was where I am here today?
Fahrenheit, I wouldn't even know, because...
I'll make a guess.
79.
It was 106.
Oh. Well, it got pretty warm here, too, this week. It's starting to heat up.
Yeah.
Something going to be 35 Celsius. I don't know what that is, Fahrenheit. But...
Very cool.
No, it's not.
Oh, it's very cool. Maybe not by Regina, Saskatchewan standards, but by 106-degree Fahrenheit temperatures, it's really cool. Now, to get to 106, you'd be what, 41, 42 degrees centigrade?
I wouldn't even know. We don't even learn that in school anymore.
Well, I just said centigrade. You weren't listening. I said 41, 42 degrees centigrade. So I got 41, 42.
I've gotten there before, not for a few years ago, but.
Ever? Up there?
Yeah. 5 years ago.
I bet people are dropping in the streets like flies when it happens.
You go inside where the air conditioning is.
You mean you have air conditioning up there?
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, there must have been another reason you called.
Yeah, about the Japanese space program.
Oh, yes.
First, most of the money for that was probably given before their current financial troubles, which have just occurred recently.
Fair enough.
And second, that probe is to study the atmosphere.
The atmosphere of Mars? We study it every time we send a probe up. What do you suppose they might find out that we don't know?
Well, there has to be something. Remember the Mars Global Surveyor? Its solar panel wing thing broke because the atmosphere was denser than what they thought it would be?
That's correct, yes. Mm-hmm.
Well, maybe there's something to it that we still don't have any idea about.
Well, that may be absolutely right. He's got a good point. In fact, what occurred, according to the scientists, is that the atmosphere, such as it is of Mars, really suddenly expanded for some indiscernible reason. And it may be the sun, it may be who knows what, but it expanded and actually hurt the solar panel, as he pointed out, of the Global Surveyor. So now they have to be very careful. Hello there.
Hey. Hi, Art.
I was going to say you're on the air, but you must have known that already.
Oh, yeah, I just grabbed my radio. Hey, this is Matt out here on the West Coast.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. Hey, the reason Japan's sending some space, probe to Mars.
Yes.
Probably because they don't trust what NASA's telling them.
Well, and, that is one possible conclusion.
Yeah, I mean, we don't trust them.
Why should the Japanese, huh?
Yeah, that's right. Hey, good to have you back, Art.
Great to be here. Thank you.
See ya.
Take care. it goes unsaid, of course. I guess I could have said it because I did wonder about it. And you should a little bit, too. Whether it's to study the atmosphere or whatever the stated reason the Japanese have for doing what they're about to do, I find it really curious. And now, yes, the budget could have been set for this. I acknowledge that. Before the Asian financial crisis. But see here now. They're talking about sending a mission to Mars. A manned mission to Mars. Now that's a lot of money. Even for us. Even for a consortium of nations. That's a lot of money. But the Japanese are getting ready to do it all on their own. Something's rotten in Nagasaki. We'll take a break here at the bottom of the hour and be right back. We're going to talk about weather control tonight. In fact, if you'll go up to my website and jump to Neil Slade, you can take a look at weather control. Stay right there.
talk with Art Bell in the Kingdom of Nye from outside the U.S., first, dial your access number to the USA. Then, 800-893-0903. If you're a first-time caller, call Art at 702-727-1222. From east of the Rockies, 1-800-825-5033. West of the Rockies, including Montana, Wyoming, Colorado, and New Mexico, call Art at 1-800-618-8255. Or call Art on the Wildcard Line at area code 702-727-1295. This is Coast to Coast AM from the Kingdom of Nye.
Nelson J. in Santa Ana writes, Dateline Santa Ana, Art, welcome back to the United States of Armageddon. CNN, a precursor to the end of hollowness, shallowness, and desperation to meet deadlines with shocking stories, even though the story was 28 years old. Exclamation point, question mark. The truth is often disappointing. The truth, though often disappointing, is stranger than fiction. Y2K. I met a FEMA district manager who says FEMA is now working their butts off trying to figure out some options for us civilians. Boulder Dam. Will the gates get stuck open or stuck shut? Either way, it's a no-win. The Fed Reserve may lose track of how much money is in the manifold situations, another no-win. In other news, Taiwan, a winner in the midst of Asian economic disaster. El Nino's insects, yes. Disease-carrying mosquitoes and other military-strength bugs. Something bit me on the calf 4 days ago, and I got an itchy rash as big as my hand. Good luck, Nelson in Santa Ana. West of the Rockies, you're on air. Hi. Hello?
Hi.
Hi there.
Hi.
Hi. We got that out of the way. Where are you?
I am in Seattle, Washington.
Seattle, Washington. All right. And your name is?
My name's Ariane.
Ariane, that's a nice name.
Thank you.
So what's up?
Well, I hear you're talking about the Japan problem with the space shuttle.
Well, I'm not sure it's a problem. And I'm not sure it has anything to, it doesn't really have anything to do with the space shuttle, but they have begun their own space program and they just launched a probe to Mars.
Hmm.
Hmm. That's what I say too. Hmm.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I just wanted to know if you had any more information on that.
Yes, and I'm going to have to hide it.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Why?
Well, because they told me to.
Japan did.
No.
Government?
Them. You know them.
Oh, them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Got it.
Okay? No, I don't. The truth is I don't have any more information. I just read it as it comes in. I guess I should qualify that so people understand it's just a simple, dry sense of humor. I don't know any more about it. I'm curious about it. I mean, you know, the best comment is, Japan sending a space probe to Mars. Japan beginning their own manned program. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Good morning.
Yeah, Art. Hi, this is Bob. I'm in Wilkes-Barre in Pennsylvania.
Hi, Bob.
I'm assuming to be okay.
Yes, sir.
All right, I was wondering, with your guest tonight, it brought me wondering. I remember hearing something about maybe a guest you might want to have on in the future. I don't know if I could mention his name on the air or not. Would that be allowed?
Yeah.
All right. It'd be John Leary. He's actually even on a website.
Who?
John Leary.
John Leary?
Yes.
Never heard of him.
Okay. He's on one of the websites. I saw him on one of the websites as one of the many so-called modern-day prophets, you know?
Hmm.
And he claims to be having these, things being shown to him and, someone...
Like what?
Well, of future events and stuff like that.
And what does he say is going to happen?
Oh, he says a lot of things. Actually, he keeps like a daily diary, and he has these books out in these volumes.
Why don't you give me an example?
Okay, well, he talks about like the stock market crash to come in the future. He talks about famine. That's going to be coming soon. He talks about weather problems. He talks about hurricanes, tornadoes, earthquakes, et cetera.
Well, he sounds just like my other guests.
Yeah, it seems like a lot of people are saying a lot of the similar things.
That's right.
And I'm just wondering, he had one part in here. I remember hearing it very shortly on your show once about the Tesla. What is the Tesla? Is that like a weather? Is that a hypothesis?
Well, there is not a Tesla. There was a man named Tesla who invented many things and probably has a reputation that has grown past reality, kind of like the old gunfighters in the West. But Tesla was a very real person.
Yeah.
And when Tesla died, the government rushed in and confiscated all his working records. Oh, yes. Tesla was a genius, my friend. Now, he may not be as much of a genius as a myth would suggest he might have been. You know, they had him creating earthquakes and doing all kinds of things, and I don't know that he actually did that, nor do I know that he did not. West of the Rockies, you're on the air.
Hi, this is Barry in Phoenix.
Hi, Barry.
Hi. I just wondering what you're going to talk to Jack Smith about tomorrow night.
Oh, what do you think I'm going to talk to him about?
Vietnam.
Well, the Vietnam War in Laos, yeah.
Huh?
Mm-hmm. Vietnam War in Laos.
Oh, I know he got shot up real bad, or his company got shot up real bad there.
Well, he was a reporter for CNN until a few days ago.
I thought he was always a reporter for ABC, and he was back on ABC.
No, actually, no. He was a reporter for CBS.
Well, he's back on he's on ABC tonight.
That may well be. Just about everybody that can get hold of the guy is doing a story on him because he got fired for doing the story on Laos. You know, the gas.
Oh, the gas deal?
Yeah. You didn't know about that?
No. Yeah, I followed it, and then I heard you last night say that there were a lot of firings at CNN, and then you said he was going to be your guest.
That's right.
So I kind of assumed that he was one of the ones that got axed from CNN.
Good assuming.
Okay. All right, thanks.
Talk to you later. And what I think you're going to find he says, or he believes, and I don't want to put words in his mouth, but I think he, by and large, stands by the story. Now, we will listen to what he has to say. And as I said last night, if CNN would like to provide a representative, I'd be more than happy to accommodate them for debate. One of the top CNN executives offered to resign over this whole thing, apparently earlier today, and he was told to stay on by Ted Turner, and apparently will. First time caller line, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi.
Yes.
You were saying last night that Vesuvius was active, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
You know, that correlates exactly with what Ed Daines was saying. That it was going to come before a war in North Korea.
That's right.
And also it correlates with what Billy Meyer...
I believe that Ed Daines said that Korea would use a nuclear weapon, and this would occur after talks between North and South Korea had resumed. They have.
Oh, they have?
Yes.
Well, it also correlates with what Billy Meyer, the prophecies were showing to Billy Meyer in Switzerland, that an eruption of Vesuvius would foreshadow a nuclear war.
And you better look around right now around the world. It's Vesuvius, it's Etna, it's Popo down in Mexico, it's Montserrat in the Caribbean. Volcanoes all over the place are becoming rather active all of a sudden, all at once. Coincidence? Synchronicity? West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello. Going once. Going twice. Gone. First time caller line, you're on the air. Hi.
Yeah, Art. Jim from Davis, California.
Hi, Jim.
Hi. Good to talk to you, Art. Glad you're back.
Thank you.
Art, I wanted to ask you about somebody who used to be... have a program similar to yours. I used to listen to him in Southern California. You remember Bill Jenkins with the Open Mind Show?
A long, long time ago, yes.
KABC.
That's right.
Yeah. Now, he used to do a lot with work with the Nikola Tesla type people and people that were looking into those sort of things. And supposedly he left in order to go to work with their organization of some sort or some
the Tesla, International Tesla Organization?
I believe that was the one.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Hmm.
I was wondering if you knew anything about that.
No.
Oh, and also today, I heard on Paul Harvey, the Japanese have evidently docked some satellites from Earth, from guidance from Earth.
Yeah, there's a lot of very interesting stuff going on with the Japanese and space, and I'm very curious.
You know, it's interesting because they usually, well, I wonder what their agenda is. You know,
well, what could they learn about Mars that we don't know and haven't found out, or the Russians don't know or haven't found out, unless there's something that we found out and haven't talked about?
Yeah. Maybe they know some information that they're going to discover because they've got some inside lines.
Maybe they don't trust us any more than we trust us.
Why should they?
Well, I guess they don't.
Yeah. Well, I find,
I mean, it's kind of like reinventing the wheel, and there's got to be a reason for it because it costs a lot of money.
Yeah, but isn't that kind of what they're best at, is reinventing the wheel? They seem to take everything else.
Very, very good, sir.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Art, glad you're back.
Yeah, take care.
Take care.
Well, yeah, that's what they're best at, reinventing the wheel. Taking the design for the wheel, improving it, and then marketing the hell out of it. And usually we end up buying it. Wildcard Line, you're on the air. Good morning.
Hi, this is Andy from Tampa, Florida. How are you?
I'm just fine.
Good. You know, a lot of people say it's so hard to get through. I've talked to you 4 or 5 times. It's just a matter of...
Well, you know what? In Ohio, there was somebody who won the lottery 3 times also.
Right, really. Hey, listen, not that you sounded like you needed it, but you sound relaxed, like this vacation was good for you.
Vacations are good for everybody.
You know, they really are. Listen, are you going to ever have Robert Lazar on again?
Oh, sure. Let's see. I think his last visit here was about 8 months ago, I'm going to guess. Something like that. Sure, I'll have him on again.
He's a fascinating individual.
Yes, he is.
You know?
And when you listen to him, you know, you hear a lot of things about Lazar from various folk.
Mm-hmm.
But when you listen to Bob, he is very credible.
Mm-hmm. Especially
his story over the years. You know, let me tell you something. A lot of ufologists, or at least some,
mm-hmm.
Have a big credibility problem because over the years, their story gets bigger and bigger and bigger, kind of like a fish story.
Mm-hmm.
Bob Lazar's story never changes.
Exactly.
Never changes. He never enlarges. He never embellishes. He just tells it like it was.
Especially when you hear him talk about annihilation reactors and gravity amplifiers and the propulsion techniques that
are
out
correct.
There.
That's correct.
Fascinating. Well, listen, Art, I'm glad you're back, and it's nice talking to you again.
Good talking to you. Thank you very much. Exactly so. His story has remained very constant, and when you listen to Bob, he's a very, very credible individual. That has always been my assessment. I interviewed him as long as, 12 years ago. East of the Rockies, you're on air. Hi.
Hello, Art.
Hi.
How are you?
Fine.
This is Dave calling from Pennsylvania.
What's new in PA?
Oh, not too much. Just called to see if you're going to be having Alex Collier on the show anytime soon.
Well... Why would I have him on? I had him on in a debate, as you well know, which was repeated recently.
Oh, no, this is Alex Collier.
Oh.
He's the contactee.
Oh.
Do you remember who he is?
No.
Okay. I guess we had spoken to him. There's a group I go to once a week. We discuss different information, like what you discuss on your show. And he did a lecture for us over the phone. And I think he and a friend of his were in touch with you or try to get in touch with you about being on your show.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't know if they had any success getting through to you.
Well, I don't recall the name, so
okay.
maybe not.
Okay.
All right, so maybe you're having said it will cause him to try and get hold of me, and we'll see what happens. Anyway, west of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Hello.
Hello. Turn your radio off, please.
Okay, 1 second.
Okay. 1 second. I can afford 1,001.
Yes, I'm calling about last Tuesday. I was driving into work early in the morning, and I heard that we supposedly bombed Iraq.
When?
I believe they said late like the night before, so I'd say probably early Tuesday morning.
I don't think so. What happened was they lit up some British planes and American planes with radar, and we fired a HARM missile. Now, is that what you're talking about?
You know, we didn't even get that much. I heard it on the way in, and they said that I'm sure you'll hear more about it later.
Okay, that's what happened. That's what happened.
Okay.
And the Iraqis said we missed.
Okay.
And that was the end of that.
All right.
Okay?
Thanks a lot.
Take care. Yes. They lit up. In other words, they locked on with targeting radar. And believe me, airplanes can tell when they're being locked on to not one, but four planes. And we fired a HARM missile at them. First time caller line, you're on the air. Hi.
All right.
Yes.
Hi, this is Meredith from Cedar Park, Texas.
All right, Meredith.
I can't believe I got through. I'm so nervous. I had something really important to tell you before you went on vacation. Then you went, and I couldn't tell you. But
what was it?
I had read in the paper that in February, do you know the Piney Woods of Texas, like North Texas?
Sure.
Well, I had read that there was a thunderstorm, no tornado or anything, and 4 million trees just fell down.
That's right.
You heard about this?
Oh, yes.
So I was wondering, what do you think? Do you think maybe the jet stream touched down? Or?
Yes, I do. Mm-hmm. That is what is occurring. The jet stream is coming down on deck, and we're getting straight-line winds of 100 to 120 miles an hour every time it does.
It's crazy. And, you know, I'm relatively a new resident here. And my first year here, I was in a tornado, and it was the most scary experience of my life. So I have been keeping an eye on the weather, and the weather's just nuts all over.
The weather is in the process of a change.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there simply is no doubt about it. It is changing.
Yeah, I know about it. So I thought this would be a good thing to tell you, on, especially on this night with your guest.
And I wonder, I sort of wonder... what it's going to change to. In other words, what are we going to be left with here in the desert? What are you going to be left with there in Texas when the change is complete?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it's just going to keep getting worse. I'm a born-again Christian.
Are you?
Yes. And stop saying that we think you're the devil's toe jam, because we do not.
Well, some do.
Well, a lot of us don't.
Well, yeah, I know, but some do.
Yeah, you're right.
But
a lot of us don't. But I think, in my opinion, from a Christian point of view, yeah, I think it's going to keep on getting worse.
All right. I appreciate the call.
Thanks, Art.
You take care. I think from the point of view of many out there, of all kinds of disciplines, it's going to keep getting worse. The prophets, the religious people, people like Father Malachi Martin and many more, they know it. And if you listen to this show carefully, you know it too. The next step, I think, is to prepare.
In the Kingdom of Nye on the Wild Card Line at area code 702-727-1295. That's area code 702-727-1295. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
It is. Good morning, everybody. Coming up in a moment is Neil Slade. Now, who's Neil Slade? Well, he's somebody who's going to talk to you this night about cloud busting, controlling the weather with your mind. Think about it. There may even be an experiment. Neil Slade is a musical composer, concert performer, author, and artist. His music has been heard by millions in the PBS documentary movie soundtrack for Still and as music for the Kodak United States Traveling Exhibition. He's given hundreds of concert, radio, and television performances, including appearances at the U.S. Air Force Academy and the Gerald Ford Amphitheater. As a graduate in music and education, he's taught for 23 years and notably was primary assistant to brain and behavior researcher TDA Lingo for 11 years at the Dormant Brain Research and Development Laboratory. In his efforts to understand the roots of creativity and intelligence, Mr. Slade has continued to explore the workings of the human brain. This has led him to help students and audiences alike in learning revolutionary new methods of brain self-control. In an unprecedented program, one of his groups included the entire student body at a Denver public elementary school, kindergarten through sixth grade. Over 600 students and their teachers learned to self-activate advanced brain levels of creativity, intelligence, and cooperative trust behavior. His newest book, The Frontal Lobes Supercharge, is an easy-to-use, do-it-yourself manual for turning on untapped areas of each and every person's brain, the other 90% that people talk about. It shows readers how the human brain works, how to sharpen their everyday working mind, and how to access and control higher modes of advanced frontal lobal circuits. We'll talk about that, of course. And we will talk about how one might do something that's called, we're going to ask about it, it's called cloud busting. Neil Slade, up in a moment. Here is a very, very interesting story. It's the headline in the Post-Internet Edition, Tuesday, July 7th, is Sony sees sense to discontinue ESP research. Listen to this now. Japan Sony Corporation says it has proved extrasensory perception exists, but has closed down its ESP research facility because there did not seem to be any way to turn the knowledge into marketable products. Sony had a team of five researchers who spent 7 years inviting people who claimed to have psychic powers into their laboratories for a series of scientific tests to see if they really did have the powers. The company's spokesman said, we found out experimentally that yes, ESP does indeed exist, but that any practical application of the knowledge is not likely in the foreseeable future, he said. That's really interesting. And so, Neil Slade, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much, Art. It is a thrill
great
to be on your show again.
Good to have you back.
Thank you very much.
Neil, do you think that in the undeveloped 90% of our brain, there rests ESP, the ability to obviously ESP is real, to perhaps move objects with our brain to control the weather, and I know we're going to talk about that tonight, and other things. But all of these strange, hard to control, but nevertheless absolutely true things that we can do with our brains, is that lying in the vast untapped area?
Yes, it is. It's a definite reality. And specifically, it's in a specific area of the brain, which is the frontal lobes. If you grab your forehead with your hand right above your eyes,
yeah,
everything that's underneath your fingertips is your frontal lobes, the first front third of your brain. And that's evolutionarily the most advanced part of the human brain.
Remember they used to do lobotomies, right?
Yes.
When they did lobotomies, what did they do?
What they did is they severed the connections between the frontal lobes and the rest of the brain. And there are connections between that part of your brain and the rest of the less advanced part of the brain. And when they cut that off, that's how they discovered what the frontal lobes did. And it was people like Alexandra Luria, a Russian neurosurgeon, who did experiments many, many years ago. And to his surprise, now we do use our frontal lobes to a small degree, and there's a trickle of activity that happens up in the frontal lobes, But the astonishing discoveries of people like Alexandra Luria and others who really examined the frontal lobes found that for the most part, the frontal lobes were dormant. That even when you did a frontal lobotomy on a person,
right,
you changed very surface types of behaviors and you had some mood alteration. But in general, the person could still function and that the changes in general behavior of a human being pretty much stayed the same.
We don't do frontal lobe lobotomies, do we anymore?
No, as far as I can gather, it is a pretty much discontinued practice because it wasn't really effective in the way that they had hoped it would be effective in controlling psychotic type of behavior and
right,
violent
right,
behavior. And we now use drugs to do basically what we used to do with frontal lobotomy. And it works a bit better, although it still isn't the kind of cure that the profession is looking for in that way.
That's because it's sort of a massive sledgehammer approach to the whole thing.
Yes, and it really is sort of like throwing the baby out with the bathwater, as it were. So it was an experiment that was tried. We learned about the frontal lobes that way, but it's not a method that has proven to be a very positive.
Are you surprised that the Sony Corporation, Sony, big old Sony in Japan, spent 7 years studying ESP, said it's absolutely a real thing?
Yeah.
But we can't figure out any way to market it, so we're going to discontinue
research. Well, actually, that doesn't come as a surprise to me at all. And we talked a little bit about this last time. And the work at the Dormant Brain Lab, in which I was involved in, kind of led us in the same direction, in that these abilities absolutely exist. They come to our aid, but they're not the kind of thing that you can use to make reptile brain profits with, if you understand.
Reptile brain profits.
We talked about how...
Yeah, we better go over all of that again.
Sure.
Briefly, if we can.
Yes, I think I've got it down to about 2 minutes.
Oh, that's good. Let's hear
that.
So
I have my notes here, and I will get right to them. The human brain is in layers. It is constructed like a baseball. You know how baseball has a core in the middle and then it's got wrappings, or it's like an apple, okay? Now, the most inside part of the brain is called the reptile brain.
I would rather think of my brain, if you don't mind, as an apple than a baseball.
I'd like to use that, too. Actually, you can use that analogy for kids, because we want to teach the kids today how the human brain works, so that when they grow up, they're using more than just 1 or 2% of their brain.
Right.
So this apple is, I'm glad you said that, because that is a better way. So the most inside part of the human brain is like the seed of an apple, and we call it the reptile brain. And it's exactly like the brains of snakes, lizards, and reptiles. And the reptile brain computes only basic survival, self-defense, and counterattack behaviors. And I'll repeat again the famous neuroscientist joke. The reptile brain computes the four Fs of behavior: fighting, fleeing, feeding, and reproduction.
Yes.
Okay. Now, the reptile brain merely reacts with the rest of the universe. It doesn't think, it just reacts. It's 100% competitive consciousness, and it only computes me, me, me types of behavior, just like snakes and lizards.
It's like a Howard Stern brain.
Yeah, that's right. I heard that call earlier. That was funny, and you fielded that so well. You know, I've got to tell you something, Art, and this also helps people to understand the difference between frontal lobes behavior and reptilian behavior. Every single radio talk show host I've ever listened to is clicked into their reptile brain. They live for combative banter.
Yes.
They love to scream. They love to argue. They love to tell people how stupid they are. That's reptilian behavior. It's competitive, combative behavior. Art, you are the only radio talk show host that I have heard that has never sunk to that low level. And
using one's reptile brain for 5 hours is too much of a strain.
You can't do it.
No, you can't do it.
It's impossible. And, you know, I've heard some real loony birds to be perfectly frank, on your show.
Oh,
but
sure.
You don't even, you know, you have people that even when you don't agree with them, I've never heard you say, oh, you're stupid.
No.
Your idea has no credibility.
No.
It's an intelligent discussion in which you respect whatever anyone has to say, no matter how different it is from your opinion. And that's pure frontal lobes type of behavior.
Good.
And it's such a pleasure to be a part of, to be able to talk with you and to turn on my radio every night and listen to this.
All right, that's enough sucking up.
Okay, anyway.
All right, so anyway.
But anyway, that's a good analogy, a difference that people can understand between reptile and frontal lobes, okay?
Okay.
But let's go back to our apple here.
Yes, back to the apple.
So we know what the reptile brain is, okay?
Right.
Typical talk radio. The next layer surrounding this inner core of the brain is called the mammal brain. And it's like the core of an apple around the reptile brain seeds. And what the mammal brain does is it adds on emotions and very basic social behaviors. And it allows you to function on the same level as your pet dog or cat. Okay? It allows you to do things with other individuals, like wolves in a pack or like a tribe of gorillas. That's what the mammal
brain is. Is it cooperative behavior?
50% cooperative behavior. Because, you know, if you threaten a mammal, okay, a typical mammal or something that has no ability to reason or think ahead, which is what the frontal lobes do, then the mammal brain can either click backwards into reptile brain counterattack, self-defense, or can click forward into cooperative behavior. But it's unpredictable. It's just depending upon the environment. The individual really doesn't have control over that in a mammal brain.
If somebody's coming at us with a pickaxe or putting a gun at us or pulls a knife on us, reptile brain is going full strength.
Absolutely.
Right. Okay.
We just like when you take the food away from the dog or take a bone away from the dog doesn't have to think about it; just clicks back.
If we're on a baseball team and we are playing a team game, we're using our mammal brain. Probably.
Well, we're using half our mammal brain, but we're using half our reptile brain to beat the other team. See? Competitive sports requires you to be 50% in your reptile brain.
Okay, but competitiveness is an important attribute for human beings.
In a play type of environment.
Well,
you know, when we have a football game, we know we're not really going to kill the other team.
We wish for it sometimes. I've sat in front of the television many times to break his leg.
We're sort of in that halfway,
that's right.
Like halfway between reptile and mammal. If everyone were in completely cooperative behavior at a football game, both teams would just start hugging each other and singing songs, okay? So you've got to, in sport.
Exactly right, throw up.
Yeah, there'd be no point to it. So, but this is also considered play behavior, which is if you watch your little puppies play with each other, they have these mock kind of attack.
That's true.
Right?
Yep.
And they bite each other and they chase each other around.
You bet.
So a certain level of reptilian behavior can be handled and it's not destructive.
Okay.
All right? That makes sense?
Absolutely.
Okay. So this is what the mammal brain does. Now also in the mammal brain contains gateway switches which control the flow of energy to even higher, more advanced parts of the brain. Inside the mammal brain is halfway between the most advanced parts, which is the outer layers of the brain,
right,
and the most primitive parts. So, and we'll get to how that works in a second. The outermost layer of the brain is called the primate brain and the frontal lobes. Now, this is like the gray matter and the white wrinkly matter. When we look at a brain, this is what we think of. When we see Frankenstein's brain in a jar.
It's the only one I can remember, a young Frankenstein. Remember Abby Normal?
Mm-hmm.
Well, anyway, so I haven't looked at a lot of brains, but I sort of understand what
we think of the wrinkly part, right? And
yeah,
we see this
yeah.
big thing, and then we kind of see the stem sticking out at the bottom, right?
Oh, yeah.
The stem is the reptile brain, and the stem goes into the very inside part, and we really don't see that. Most of what we see is the primate brain and the frontal lobes, which is that front third, and that makes up 5/6 of the total volume of our human brain. And it computes the most complex, refined, and advanced human behaviors. It computes abstract thought,
mm-hmm.
concepts of time,
mm-hmm.
planning, and it computes CICIL, what we call CICIL, C-I-C-I-L.
What is that?
This stands for creativity, imagination,
mm-hmm.
cooperation, intuition, logic. We use this CICIL to teach those 600 school kids how to get out of their reptile brain only and move forward into advanced cooperative creative intelligence. We said CICIL. You can remember CICIL, C-I-C-I-L.
It is not frequently accessed, though, and these switches are not frequently on. How come?
We are culturally conditioned to click backwards into our reptile brain. Turn on your TV set. What do you see? You see people with guns. You see car chases. You see people on the Jerry Springer arguing, fighting. We are evolutionarily stuck at a certain level. We have all the brain circuitry there to move forward and out into the stars. But the great cosmic joke is we haven't learned to turn it on yet. People, you know, here's something that people don't really understand how powerful and complicated a machine their brain is, the one sitting between your ears. Let me tell you what everybody is walking around with. The human brain contains between 10 and 100 billion neurons in this outer layer of cortex, what we're talking about, okay? Now, we can only estimate this number because it's really too big to calculate precisely. Now, underneath that outer layer, still in the primate brain, there's another 150 billion glial cells, and they play a supporting role to the cortex, the outer layer. Okay? Then there's all the cells that are in the innermost layers of the brain, in addition to those outer 250 billion.
Okay, I think I can grasp that. So the outer part of our brain is the real creative, civilized portion of our brain, the one that we so rarely seem to access.
Yes.
And you think it's I guess I'm going to ask you now, are we evolving into more access, or are we devolving into less access of that area?
I don't know. What do you think?
I'm not asking about Neil Slade because, I think a lot about this. I'm asking about the general population of the world.
I think we're teeter-tottering. I think we could go either way. And this is really what the focus of the work that T.D. Lingo did at the Dormant Brain Lab, and that was to explain to people how they can then teeter-totter into the most advanced part of their brain so we as a society learn to teach the little ones and our friends. And so instead of using just 1% of our brain, we can start to tap into the infinity circuits. And what he found was that, for 2,000 years, we've had different religions, you know, and we've had all kinds of philosophies. And in the 60s, we had the summer of love where everyone thought, oh, we're going to love everyone. But unfortunately, all these things fizzled out, and we have Pakistan and India doing the nuclear tests, and we hear
I'm not sure that the summer of love really was exactly that. It was kind of more like the summer of sex. And that's true. If it had really been the summer of love, then it might have lived up to its billing. But the summer of love really meant let's get it on.
Okay.
Neil, hold on. We're at the bottom of the hour, and we'll be right back. Neil Slade is my guest. And we're talking about the human brain. And shortly we're going to talk about what the human brain, when the frontal lobes are popped on correctly, can do. And one of the things that Neil Slade will prove to you it can do is control the weather. We've been talking about the weather a lot lately. Stay right there.
In the Kingdom of Nye, send it to him at area code 702-727-8499, 702-727-8499. Please limit your faxes to one or two pages. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell. Now, here again is Art.
And we've got Neil Slade here tonight. Neil studied the human brain with one of the greatest for many, many years. And he's here talking about the human brain this morning. Stay tuned. I think you'll find it absolutely fascinating. Listen, New Crop Circle on their website, and they're having quite a season in Great Britain, Clanfield, Hampshire Crop Circle, reported June 19th. Now we've got a photograph for you on the website. You're going to want to take a look at this. They're becoming more complex as time goes on. I bet if we could control some greater portion of that 90%, we'd probably understand exactly what they mean. What do you think? Anyway, a brand new one. We're going to do a show on crop circles pretty soon. We're going to bring a reporter who's over there going through each and every one every day now in Great Britain on the air, and we'll probably bring him on the air from Great Britain. He'll talk to you about crop circles. See if he understands any more than he did previously. Once again, Neil Slade. There are a couple of things that I do want to mention. One, again, is the Clanfield, Hampshire Crop Circle. The other is when Keith gets back online, he's kind of out of pocket right now. I have sent him a ghost photograph that is really intriguing. It's either a fake or it's one of the more interesting ghost photographs I've ever seen. One of the two. I don't know. You never know. But it sure is intriguing. And so we'll get that up on the website, I'm sure, before the night is done. The other is, I think Linda Moulton Howe is also out of pocket right now, not in Philadelphia. I need to get hold of Linda Moulton Howe. So Linda, if you're out there, call me, or if somebody knows where Linda is, tell her to call me, please. During the day, later in the day, between, 11 and 3 Pacific time or something, I need to get hold of Linda Moulton Howe. All right, now back to Neil Slade. Neil, hi.
Hi again.
All right. Here we are with all of this ability in this, the greater outer portion of our brain, our frontal lobe.
Yeah.
And the key is, what do we use it for? How do we turn it on? How do we begin to access it?
Yeah, okay. Well, as I mentioned before, we've tried as civilization has sort of stumbled along here. We've tried a lot of different ways to sort of get all the good stuff going.
Mm-hmm.
But now that we've been inside the brain and we can actually take pictures of it of it working from the inside with MRIs and PET scans, really has allowed us to pinpoint how the consciousness and thought processes and energy flows through the brain. Now, as you remember, about a week after I was on last December, you played a show, or you had a woman on named Harlot.
Yes.
And she was a Satanist
She was a Satanist.
She was a Satanist.
Hail Satan, whole thing.
And she was describing all sorts of really negative, horrible scenarios and really bad reptilian types of energies and processes. she was really clicked back into her reptile brain. And in the middle of your discussion with her, all of a sudden there was this unexplainable photograph that appeared on your webcam.
That's right.
And there were, and no one really was able to pinpoint it. And I just, you know, I just got in the computer and I turned it on and I saw that photograph and I went, holy cow, this is a photograph of energy in the brain. 9 years ago, I had done my original brain book called The Frontal Lobes Handbook, and I know how the pathways in the brain move. And also, I mean, you can see a lot of, there was a video on the Discovery Channel, a video that you can actually go to the library and check out. And it shows the pathways of energy in the brain and how it flows. And I looked at this photograph and I said, holy cow, here is a picture of the energy caught on videotape.
Hmm.
And if people go, I kept those photos, and if people go to my website, they can click on the Art Bell energy photo.
Oh, you're kidding. You've got that up there.
Yes, and I have the explanation, the neuroscientist's view of what this is. So I don't know if you've got your computer by or anything, but if people look at this photo...
My computer is always here.
Okay. If you look at the photo, and I'll describe it for people who don't have a computer. We have a side profile of your head, and
yes,
you're looking to the left side, our left, and the entire area of where your frontal lobe sit is covered with a flash of light. It almost looks like you have gray hair, and we know you don't have gray hair. Yeah,
well, I have a little in my mustache, but
right.
Yeah, that's right.
It's
I don't.
Like there's a cloud.
No, it's true. This photograph, actually, there's a time hack on it when it was taken.
Yes, and I made note of that.
And
I made specific note of that. It happened at 1:26:21.
That's right.
Same thing forwards and backwards.
That's correct.
Right. And you replayed it a few days later because you wanted to know what was said at that exact moment.
That's right.
I got out my stopwatch.
That's exactly correct. Now, I didn't know this photograph. It was called to my attention. This was taken.
Yes.
All right. And fortunately, it was able to be retrieved. We got the photograph. We checked the time. And as you point out, the time is the same forwards as it is in reverse. And there is no question. We were talking at that instant about... her wish, in fact, her statement that she had taken her child and made sure before her child was murdered that her child would join her in hell.
Yes.
It was one of the eeriest, strangest moments that I've had in talk radio, and that is the exact instant photograph was.
Art, I can be even more precise than that. I can tell you the exact two words. Okay, and I'll tie this into the brain because then you'll understand what this picture is.
Okay.
While you were talking to her, you clicked into your reptile brain. What she was saying was so traumatic, so negative, you had to put up your defenses. So you were clicked into self-defense.
I believe it.
So all the energy comes up, it starts inside your reptile brain, and then it works its way out, and it gets to the mammal brain where it gets to the click switch, right? Now, at that point, at the amygdala, one of the switches is called the amygdala, and at that point, the energy can either be clicked backwards, where it's recomputed by reptile brain, or blocked, just like a dam blocks water, okay? Or it can be clicked forward, in which case it goes further out to the frontal lobes and eventually goes out your forehead, and the energy is projected back out to universe. So there's a cycle. Follow? Now, when the energy is blocked at the amygdala, and you're clicked backward into self-defense, okay?
I was definitely in a very defensive state.
It's a short circuit. It's like a circuit that's not completed, okay? And you feel bad because it is anti-survival.
Yes.
You can't stay there. If you stay there, you will get sick and you will die.
Yeah.
Eventually.
Oh, it stopped me cold. It has haunted me ever since.
Right. Now, at the very moment, 1:26:21,
mm-hmm.
she was saying one sentence in her entire little spiel there. she started talking about God.
Mm-hmm.
For one sentence. And when she said, now, it doesn't, you can be an atheist and you'll understand this. You don't have to be a religious person, but you'll understand. She said, his essence. She was talking about God. And when she said his essence, it's like when you're clicked into your reptile brain, you're pulling the rubber band back and you're making it tighter and tighter and the tension is getting tighter. And when she said his essence, all of a sudden your brain computed, yes, there is a higher force out there, a positive force that can protect me. And at that moment, it was like, as if the rubber band was released, the energy clicked forward into the frontal lobes, and you made the connection
mm-hmm.
with cosmic consciousness, with a higher source. And the rubber band of energy flew out your frontal lobes, and you could see the tube of light or energy or whatever it is that's coming out right through the third eye.
All right. Now, I want to say something about this photograph, because a lot of people, based on what you have just said, are going to go and look at it.
Yeah.
Now, there have been those who have said, some few, actually, that it's smoke. All right? But
that's okay.
They're wrong.
Well,
they're wrong. I sit here and very nearly chain smoke these things that are barely even cigarettes that I smoke.
Yeah.
And so we have taken probably by now hundreds of thousands of photographs that have been snapped, and never, ever has one even remotely looked like this. So,
well,
no,
it's
not,
on it,
not smoke.
It's like lightning spikes.
Yeah, I know.
And I believe what that is, it's sort of like it's this energy is also, once it gets out of your brain, it has to be grounded, just like if you had a loose electric wire.
Yep.
So we're seeing the spikes of that current being grounded as it gets a little bit out of your brain. And, of course, as soon as she started talking about the devil again, then you had to click back into reptile brain. So we don't see this energy going out to infinity, but we do see for that one fraction of a second when you think of when she mentions this higher power, you're able to make that connection. And I recall you had a fellow named on Alper, Matthew Alper.
Oh, thank you.
And he even said, he talked about the God part of the brain. And
that's
he right. said, when we are in mortal danger, our brain computes God, right?
You're exactly correct.
Right. And he says, this is how we survive this, what is obviously fear of death that we face all the time. We compute it. We counteract this mortal terror with a thought of God. So we can actually see in this photo some sort of energy coming out of your brain when you made that connection with the God part of your brain. And it, you know, I mean, it's you don't have to say, well, God is this thing sitting up at this throne. Maybe for you it was just the universal energy system, or just the sense that there is something out there that can counterattack. But it was a release. You see how the energy was released and clicked forward for that moment. And, you know, I looked at this too and I thought, well, you know, Art was smoking and some smoke went up. But, you know,
no.
If you think about it, if you've ever seen wind tunnel experiments, the wind is blowing and you can't see the wind, right?
Right.
And then they put some smoke and the smoke shows the current of the wind.
That's correct.
That's right? Okay. Now, I don't know exactly what this photo is other than it shows the brain energy. The brain energy itself might be invisible, but it can most definitely have, perhaps it had an effect on dust particles in the air. And as the energy was so strong coming out of the brain, just like in a wind tunnel, it ionized the dust particles, so they formed a pattern that was in, that went along with the strong force of invisible, perhaps psychic energy coming from your brain, or even if it was smoke, the force of the energy was so strong, it may have formed a pattern that you could see in the photograph because of the flow of that.
I am telling you right now, it was not smoke.
Well, yeah, but in any case, it's showing some sort of energy field being radiated from the brain. If you look at the photo, also, it actually shows where the click switch is. and there's a little bulbous part which is the closest part to your ear.
I see it.
That is the exact,
I'm on your website right
sure,
now.
That is the exact location and shape of the amygdala switch.
All right.
Exactly where it sits. And
look, everybody, go up to my website and go over to go down to Neil's name, Neil Slade's name in the guest area. Go to his website, and when you get there, go down, click on, it says Art Bell Brain Energy Photo. Click on that and take a look.
Yeah.
For yourself.
So people want to know what we're using to change the weather, what we're using to break up cloud formations in the sky, what energy we're using for telepathy and precognition and telekinesis. There's a picture of the flow of energy in the brain. It's showing where the energy starts. It's showing where the energy is computed by the frontal lobes, because that's the part of the brain that computes it. And it shows it leaving the prefrontal lobes, which is in front of the frontal lobes, and that's even the more advanced part of the brain. And it's showing the actual way the energy flows through the brain. So we're not talking about some new agey kind of fluffy, you know, love everybody and positive thought. I mean, that's all good. We're talking about an actual neurological process that we understand the neurochemistry for. We understand the neural pathways for. We understand how all the parts are connected. And darn it, you can see it in that photo.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a historic photo for that reason.
Nope. You're absolutely correct. I think it is as well. And now that I look at it again right now, it still freaks me out. It really does.
It's,
I mean,
wild.
To see that, the only thing I have to say is, folks, I guarantee that was not. That was, whatever it is, it's not smoke. So think what you will. It is what it is. It was snapped at exactly 126.21, and interestingly, and I'm not really into numerology, but 126.21 reads the same way both ways.
Well, you know, I think that's how the universe is, in fact. You can look at something. There's a famous Zen saying that says, if one thing is true, then the opposite is true. And some people, when they look at that photo, they say, that's a ghost, and that's a skull and a neck. And who's to say that they're wrong? But we can also say, well, we can look at it and say, well, we know how energy flows through the brain, it's also neuroenergy flowing through the brain. So if you're computing with, if you don't know anything about the brain and you look at it, you can say it's a ghost, and well, who's to say that you're wrong, you know? But if you know a little bit about the brain, you can look at it and say, oh yeah, that's the energy flow. Now I know a little more about how the brain works. And then you can control it, see? Knowledge is power. You understand how your brain is put together, then you can steer your brain down the road, and you can take it where you want to go.
We're going to talk shortly about cloud busting. What do you think, ultimately, if human beings acted together and were able to access this larger part of our brain, what would we actually be capable of doing?
I don't think there's any limit to what we are capable of doing. I think one of the usefulnesses, is that a word, of cloud busting, it allows an individual to go in their front yard or in their backyard and to start to see what they are capable with their brain. Who cares? I mean, now this is, just so people know what cloud busting is briefly, it's where you pick a specific cloud in the sky, and you can have a lot of clouds lined up in a row in the sky, and you can pick a specific cloud of your choice, or you can have a friend pick one, and you can concentrate this frontal lobe's energy that we see in the photo, and you can make that cloud vaporize, disappear in a matter of 3 to 5 minutes. And once you make that connection with your brain and with your ability to do that, it opens up the door to, well, if I can manipulate clouds 10,000 feet up with my mind,
mm-hmm.
what limits are there to what I can do? And I don't think there is really any limit. I think probably, you know, when we're visited by these unexplainable flying ships in the sky, and when we see crop circles, what we're seeing is evidences of intelligences who have learned to tap into what may be their infinite brain circuit.
I believe you. I believe that our brains are capable of this. And on your website, you have, and your website is beginning to jam up, by the way.
Is it?
Yeah. But you've got actual video evidence.
Yes.
What is it? Some sort of moving video file? I can't get to it. It's so busy.
What I did, you know, and I think I sent you some email about a month ago or so, and I was really looking for some ways to show people that what we're talking about when we're talking about opening up and accessing paranormal and extrasensory abilities, that it's a real thing. It's something that you can prove to yourself. So I just ran in my back. I thought, well, I know. I've been doing this for 20 years, and I have a half a dozen friends.
All right, hold it right there. That's a good place to hang everybody up. I love doing that, hanging them up. We're going to talk about cloud busting when we come back, and the evidence is on his website. We'll talk about that in a moment. Taking a cloud and causing it to disperse within 5 minutes or so. Think it can be done? This is Coast to Coast AM.
Talk with Art Bell in the Kingdom of Nye. From east of the Rockies, dial 1-800-825-5033. 1-800-825-5033. West of the Rockies, including Montana, Wyoming, Colorado, and New Mexico, 1-800-618-8255. 1-800-618-8255. Now again, here's Art Bell.
Well, I don't think we're ever going back where we came from. But you never know. It's a pretty song. I'm Art Bell, and my guest is Neil Slade, and he is a brain researcher, was originally a graduate in music and education, but taught 23 years in that area, then notably was the primary assistant to brain and behavior researcher, TDA Lingo, for 11 years at the Dormant Brain Research and Development Laboratory. And we are talking about the nature of the brain. We've talked about that for the past hour. Describe the various areas of the brain, and how there are switches between the primitive areas of our brain, the reptile areas, and the higher order areas, the frontal lobe portions and the outside portions of the brain, and how one might begin to utilize that portion of the brain. Now we're up to the point where Neil is going to tell you that it is possible to cloud bust, and you can prove it to yourself as he did. He's got video on his website, which you can reach through mine, though it's beginning to slow at the moment because of all the traffic. Can't get to it tonight, get to it tomorrow. And he's going to tell you exactly the experiment he performed. It should be very, very interesting indeed. So that's all coming up in a moment, and I think you're going to find it fascinating. So whether or not you have a computer, stay right where you are, and we'll talk about affecting the weather with your brain. All right, back now to Neil Slade. Neil, and so you wanted to prove that it could be done, that you could dissipate a cloud with the power of your brain, and so you did what?
Well, again, this is something that I learned how to do 20 years ago. I was a yoga and meditation instructor while I was going to college. And one of the things that you do when you meditate and you practice hatha yoga is you learn to focus and concentrate different kinds of energy in your body. Some people call this chi energy. Some people call it life force.
Whatever it is, it's, by the way, absolutely real. There have been clinical studies of yogis. They can control their heart rate. They can control all kinds of things that we cannot.
Oh, it's amazing.
And it's also absolutely true.
There is a guy named Jack Schwartz who
I've seen on television, and he will take a large darning needle and shove it right through. He'll roll it around on the floor and get it really dirty first,
yeah.
And then he'll shove it through his biceps muscle. Then he'll pull it out, right? No pain, no bleeding, and then they'll do a close-up on it, and the wound within 5 minutes is completely cleared up. And he does this with mind control. And they ask him, well, what do you think about when you're doing this? He says, oh, fields and flowers. He clicks into positive frontal lobe imagery, and what this does is it turns off all the negative influences.
Don't try this at home.
Oh, no, absolutely not. I mean, this is somebody who's practiced this, you know, as a very dedicated type of discipline.
And for the average person to try that right now, they're going to end up in the emergency room.
Yes, they would be insane.
Yeah.
Okay, but he's a long-term practiced yogi, so he's able to do this.
Yes, well, the whole point is I really want my audience to understand this is absolutely real. Yogis can do these things with their brains, period.
Yes, right. Now I can't do that, and I wouldn't want to attempt to do it, but I did learn how to channel that energy in a different way through this technique of cloud busting that I pick up from some other yoga people. So, and I'd forgotten, I haven't done this for many years, and then I realized, well, I was going to be on your show. Let's think of something really cool that we can share with people that will demonstrate this psychic energy.
Right.
I thought, let's go bust some clouds and put it on videotape and get it on the web. And that way people know I'm not crazy, okay? That I'm not just making this up. And as I mentioned before, I must have a half a dozen friends who can do this. You can go to the public library. There's a book called Yoga, Youth, and Reincarnation in which this skill is documented. So this is one thing that I can do, and people can learn actually very...
All right, only a very small percentage of the people are going to be able to get to your website through mine or directly or however and see this. So describe to us what we would see if we could go there and see it.
Okay, I went in the backyard with my old Panasonic camera, and I picked a cloud that was almost directly overhead. Now, actually, the best way to do this is to pick a day when there is no wind, okay? Because the wind will interfere. I don't know why, but it interferes with your ability to project the energy. Maybe it disperses the energy.
Right.
I don't know why. Maybe it cools down the air or something. But so I picked a day that there was absolutely no wind. Clouds were just sitting in the sky. I picked a bunch of clouds. With a little bit of blue sky so you could see where the cloud started and where it stopped.
Right.
And I put in the center of the viewfinder a good cloud adjusted area, okay? And you could see a little blue around, okay? And you could see the clouds weren't moving.
Right.
Then I said, okay, now I'm going to punch a hole in the middle of this cloud bank without disturbing any of the surrounding cloud formation. And I just focused the energy coming out of my frontal lobes. I clicked my amygdala forward, which is the gateway switch, so the energy gets past the reptile brain, past the mammal brain, and then out from the frontal lobes,
mm-hmm.
concentrated on this area within 3 minutes, really to my surprise, because I thought it would take longer than this, a huge gaping hole appears right in the middle of this cloud bank, and the surrounding clouds are, for the most part, they're completely undisturbed. So you can see that the wind is not blowing clouds across the sky.
Yeah.
What you see is it's like somebody's taking a spoon and swirling in the middle of the clouds, and the cloud, and there's a hole that appears, and the cloud in the middle vaporizes. And on the website, what we did is we took a GIF file. So we took we had a Snappy, as a matter of fact, we used.
Right.
And we took one picture, and then we waited 30 seconds, and we took another one, and there's about 10 pictures, and they fire off in rapid succession. And first you see the cloud bank, and then you see the hole, and the clouds all the way around it still in existence. Okay? Now, I did that once, and I thought, okay, people are going to say that was a coincidence, it was luck. I said, now, without turning the camera off, I'm going to point at another cloud. I'm going to do the same exact thing again. And I did it again, right
wow.
in a row. And this time it was a different cloud bank, and there was a little separate cloud, a
slightly smaller one surrounded by clouds. And I said, okay, I'm going to concentrate on this little one and make it disappear. And it also took about 3 minutes. Only the cloud in the center that I put, and you can see it on the website, it's smack in the middle of the viewfinder. It took 3 minutes. It goes, it just vaporizes into nothing. Just as I said it would.
I'm getting a lot of faxes from people who support what you're saying.
Yes.
They have also done it. This apparently is something that's been going on for a long time. I didn't know about it.
Actually, from what I was told, this is a very ancient yogic meditation in which one learns to control this chi or brain energy, and it's a way that you can demonstrate it very effectively. And by doing this, then you, as you go through your daily activities, you think, well, maybe something is happening the way I don't want it to. Maybe I'm projecting that energy. Now, you talk a lot on your show about the weather. When I first learned this cloud busting ability, I lived with another group of people, and the fellow who owned the house taught what he called instant meditation.
Mm-hmm.
And he lived near the DU campus, and he would ride his bicycle down to the park. Now, this was like a 60-year-old gentleman, and he was, his name was George Green, and he's gone on to, he's passed on since then, so I don't mind mentioning his name on the air. But George, he taught instant meditation, and he was formerly a millionaire meatpacking processing plant owner.
Mm-hmm.
And he decided one day that he was not really happy. He gave up the meatpacking business. He started meditating. And he started selling flowers on the corner, on the street corners in Denver. And he started going around teaching students at DU and people at the park for free how to do instant meditation. And we did all kinds of really unexplainable, bizarre things that George explained to us. This is the power of the mind and of your brain. And if you can control your thought processes, then you start to tap into all these other kinds of things that normally people aren't aware that they can do. They're not even aware that they exist. For example, George would drive. He had an old Rambler, a green Rambler sedan. He would drive his car. He would get in his car and drive to a flea market 10 miles across town and back. And he would meditate the whole way, and he would not hit one red light on the entire trip. That's because I'm doing my instant meditation. One time he was having trouble with his transmission.
Now, it's really strange you should mention that. I've done that.
Really? Now, how did you do that?
I don't know. With green lights. I've done it.
Was it a deliberate kind of focusing of thought?
Absolutely. No,
oh, okay.
Absolutely. I tried it, and it worked. Actually, you would have to know Las Vegas to know what I'm about to say. But on Charleston, which is it cuts from one side of Las Vegas to the other with stoplights at just about every single corner, which are not – they're supposed to be coordinated. There's got a computer system, and it's supposed to be coordinated. So if you go a certain speed, you can just keep on trucking if there's not a lot of traffic.
Yeah.
But the computer system has not yet worked. And so it's completely random. And I actually made it from one side of the city to the complete other side of the city without ever hitting one red light, varying my speeds and using only my intense concentration to do so. I did that one time.
It's like how fire engines, they can send out a radar signal and override the signal. It's like you're doing that with your brain.
Well, look at what they're doing at Princeton right now. At Princeton, they are proving beyond any shadow of a doubt the human brain can control, and I can demonstrate it right here on my own little computer, a random number generator. There is no question about it. At Princeton, they have proven this beyond any shadow of any doubt, period. The brain can do that. And if it can do that, it can control things like traffic lights.
You can do it. You know what? What I discovered, you can do it with flipping a coin. And
I would imagine so.
Depending
yes.
on, you know, statisticians would really give me a hard time on this.
I'm sure they would.
Okay, but I do it informally. And if I've got a lot of things that I'm supposed to be doing and I try to do this, of course it doesn't work because my brain is saying, no, you're not supposed to be playing with coins. You're supposed to be a productive member of society. So I'm and when I'm
which means making coins, not trying to cause the outcome to flip.
Whatever. If you're clicked back, you know, if you're clicked into self-defense and survival, if you're worried about this, worried about that, none of this paranormal stuff is going to work.
That's right.
You've got to have a clear, calm state of mind. You've got to be able to click that amygdala forward and get into the frontal lobes. And then all these paranormal extrasensory stuff happens spontaneously. It happens automatically. You don't even have to make them work. I think this is a big misconception that people have about paranormal abilities. People who are in the business of helping other people, of doing very important work, that uses paranormal abilities, they'll get those abilities.
Using the power of concentration on a coin flip.
Yeah.
What percentage can you affect? Have you found?
I haven't done it that much, but I feel that if you can increase 20%, you're really doing very well.
Well, shouldn't the same principle apply to somebody working a craps table?
Yeah, but see, no. Now here we're getting into a different kind of thing, okay? And we talked about this a little bit, but I think it's worth review. Your reptile brain is the part of your brain that computes me types of behaviors.
And when you're throwing craps, you're definitely into the me.
You're definitely into me.
Yeah.
Now, extrasensory and paranormal abilities are computed by the frontal lobes. And the frontal lobes is the part of the brain that connects with the rest of the universe.
Well said. So in a moment of greed-induced traps throwing, you're not very likely to be accessing those higher areas.
You can't. It's like driving backwards and forwards at the same time.
I understand.
You can't do it. It's impossible. We were talking about, we had a little discussion about why negative psychic powers might work or why they don't work. And,
exactly.
And I agree with you to a certain extent that they can be used for good or evil. But the problem is when you start to use these kinds of powers for evil purposes, there's this automatic shutoff that happens. And I'll explain this to you. If a person were to use telepathy, for example, to harm another person, that same telepathy would ensure that the evildoer empathically feels the other person's pain. Ouch. Okay? You can't make a person feel bad telepathically without feeling the same thing that they're feeling.
Gotcha.
So it would be like putting your own finger in the fire. Follow?
Gotcha. Well, you know, a lot of people will say, look, if these powers are real, why don't you go out and win the lottery and prove it? You know, and that sort of thing. So it's the exact same thing. You really can't use these abilities when you're locked into that reptilian part of your brain.
If you're trying to see into the future, if you're trying to turn on your telepathy, your precognition, what you're doing is you're leaving your ego behind and you're going into the big pot and you're throwing yourself into the superconscious, and the superconsciousness is the combined consciousness of everyone out there.
What a lot of people call the collective consciousness.
It's something that's shared.
Right.
Now, if you're in the shared consciousness, you're not going to be thinking, well, what can I take and grab just for myself? Because as soon as you start thinking, what am I going to keep all to myself, you've just stepped out of the collective consciousness and back into your little, tiny, little mind, your little ego mind.
Mm-hmm.
See?
Oh, I do see. Yes, I see indeed.
So,
now you're suggesting, first of all, I guess it's now worth asking. Suppose I wanted to go out tomorrow where we have very few clouds.
Yeah.
And try a cloud bust. We've got a few lingering clouds, even though it got up to 106 yesterday.
Yeah.
We've got a few lingering clouds, storm clouds, that kind of thing. And I could try that on a good calm day.
Okay.
How would I mentally get into the mode, put myself in the mode to be able to do that? What is the actual exercise?
Okay. There's two levels of this that you have to understand. Somebody asked me, how do I play the piano? And I said, well, you take your finger and you press down on the key. Blink. Okay? Mm-hmm. That's how you play the piano. That's one level.
Mm-hmm.
But then they say, well, yeah, but what about, but that doesn't sound like Beethoven or Mozart. I say, well, it does go a little deeper than that. I can show you how to play Twinkle Twinkle in about 5 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
But if you want to sound like Beethoven, you're going to have to go into it a little bit deeper. Okay? So when people go out to do cloud busting, okay, they may be able to do this right away, or they might have a little trouble. Now, if they have trouble, it means they need to go into it deeper. Now that's why I wrote the Frontal Lobe Supercharge book and all the other brain books, is because I give instructions how to go into these deeper levels. So if people can't do something right away, they will understand and get the exact instructions.
Is it possible here on the radio, in a sort of a 101 form, to tell us how to do it?
Yes, and I'm going to do that. I'm going to do that.
Absolutely excellent. All right, hold on right where you are, and we will we'll try and do that when we come back, sort of give you the quick 101 on how to tap into the deeper levels and go out and try this for yourself. The hardened skeptics have already turned their radios off long since. Goodbye to you. For the rest of you who are curious and understand exactly what we're talking about, you're going to want to stick around and find out. I'm Art Bell, and this is Coast to Coast AM.
From the Kingdom of Nye, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell. First-time callers may reach Art at area code 702-727-1222, 702-727-1222. Now, here again is Art.
Once again, here I am. In a moment, we're going to talk to Neil Slade and kind of get the simple 101 on how to do what he can do. Now, maybe it isn't going to be simple, but we'll do the best job we can. And then shortly, we're going to ask a couple of other questions and then get the lines open. And for the open minds, for those who have actually done this, this cloud-busting business, we'd love to talk to you. And we'll talk more about the implications of controlling the weather and maybe many other things with the power of your mind. All right, Neil Slade is here. And again, Neil studied under TDA Lingo, a brain researcher, for 11 years at the Dormant Brain Research and Development Laboratory. And a lot of what you're hearing, I'm sure, sounds strange and even impossible to you, but it is not. It is indeed possible. And the things we have talked about with regard to yogis and what they are able to do, I know seems like New Age gobbledygook, but it's not. It's scientifically established. As a matter of fact, the Sony Corporation, let me read this one more time. It came from the South China Morning Post. The headline is, Sony sees sense to discontinue ESP research. But now listen to the story. Japan Sony Corporation says it has proved extrasensory perception exists, but nevertheless has closed down its ESP research facility because there did not seem to be any way to turn the knowledge into marketable products. the Japanese. Sony had a team of 5 researchers who spent 7 years inviting people who have claimed psychic powers into their laboratories for a series of scientific tests to see if they really did have the power. The company spokesman, whose name I would not try to pronounce, said, quote, "We found out experimentally that, yes, ESP does exist, but that any practical application of this knowledge is not likely in the foreseeable future." That's from Sony. Now, Neil Slade, I think, has some rather practical applications in mind. And right now, we're going back to him. Neil, welcome back.
Hi, thank you.
Let's try for the short 101.
Okay.
For people who would like to try it out there, how can we put ourselves or try and put ourselves in this state to try a cloud-busting experiment?
What you'll find is it's simpler than you thought. It's like flying a kite.
Okay.
You know, the way to fly a kite is you don't throw it up in the air and then run along the ground, right? You let the wind blow it, okay?
Well, I used to run to get it going.
Oh, well, okay, to get it. But that's a very hard way.
Yes,
it is. If you're going to try to turn on your paranormal abilities, it's not something that you force to happen. You let it happen.
Mm-hmm.
And by doing that, that's how you're going to do the cloud busting. I did want to ask you a favor, though.
Sure.
People who have to go to bed early and would like to get some more information, can I go ahead and give out that 800 number, so if they want to contact me?
Of course you may.
There's 2 numbers you can call, and if you have a credit card, you can get the Frontal Lobes Supercharge book. And I actually put this together with Art Bell listeners in mind. And it's a big book, 32,000 words, 20 chapters, and it's got everything that you'll need to know how to learn to tap into and start using these powers. And it's got charts, and it's got games, and it's got detailed instructions and everything. The number you can call is 1-800-362-1670. And if you don't get through on that one, you can try 1-888-682-7717.
Okay.
And also, if you just want to mail a check or money order payable to Neil Slade for $12.95, you'll get the book in the mail, and you can just mail that in to P.O. Box 6799, Denver, Colorado, 80206. P.O. Box 6799, Denver, 80206. So if you have to go to bed, now you've got the info.
There you go.
Now, if you're willing to stay up, we're going to do a couple of pretty interesting and exciting things here.
Okay.
Cloud busting 101.
Yeah.
Okay. The first thing you want to do is locate your amygdala switch, and this will ensure that the energy moves forward from the more primitive parts of your brain into the more advanced parts that control these paranormal things. Okay. Now, if you have a computer, you can see exactly where the amygdala is on the website. So if you don't, here's where it is.
Oh, you mean physically you can see where it is?
Yeah, right.
Okay, all right.
I mean, you can go to the website, and either on the Art Bell weird photo page where we have the energy, you can see where the amygdala is, right, that little bulbous area by your ear, or I actually have a diagram that shows where it is on the website. It says find your amygdala here. Now, if you don't have a computer, I'll explain it to you. You have 2 amygdala. They are little walnut or almond shaped, more like it's just a little nut shaped bulbous part of your brain. It's located about 1 inch inside each temple. So you've got one inch on the inside of the left temple, and that controls the left hemisphere of the brain. And then you've got one inch inside the right temple. And it's right between your eyeball, the back of your eyeball, and your ear, and a little bit higher up than that. But it just as long as you know the approximate location, that's fine, because we're doing a visualization here.
Right, I understand.
Okay? To get the energy flowing from the primitive part of the brain to the advanced part of the brain, you click your amygdala forward. It works just like a light switch. And if you can imagine that you've got a little toggle switch inside your brain on both sides.
In those precise areas.
In those general areas, okay? Because we're not doing a physical manipulation. We're doing a thought process.
I understand.
The thought process actually will find exactly where your amygdala is.
So you actually, you just sit there and concentrate on these general areas and concentrate on flipping a couple of switches forward.
It takes very little concentration, as a matter of fact.
Okay.
You can do it a couple of ways. Imagine you've got a little toggle switch. Just click the toggle switch forward.
Okay.
That's it. Or you can use a feather. I like to use a feather because when you click your amygdala forward, it's very easy. It's not like you have to have a sledgehammer. See, people think if they really bear down and really concentrate hard, they're going to force that energy forward. That's not how the frontal lobes work.
You could get a hernia as well. So
yes, it's so simple. It's like it's easier than walking down the street. It's a thought process. Imagine that you've got a feather and you're just feather tickling the front of your left amygdala, and just by imagining that. That will open up your imagination circuits in your frontal lobes, and the energy will begin to flow into your frontal lobes.
Gotcha.
How could it be any simpler than that?
All right, so you might actually try this. Go outside, recline, comfortable.
Right, so you can stand up, you can lie down on the, if you're lying down on the grass, that's good because you'll be looking straight up.
Precisely.
And you want to start out with smaller clouds that are close by. So if you're looking straight up, that's going to be the closest clouds to you. Okay? Plus, you want to be relaxed. So the first thing is you click your amygdala forward.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? You click the left one forward, the right one forward.
Gotcha.
Okay? And then you pick the cloud. Now, there's a couple of things that you have to remember. Okay? And I'll tell you what you need to do. You want to look for cumulus clouds. These are the white, puffy, cotton candy type of clouds.
Sure.
It doesn't work with super dense, hard-edged, or rain clouds. Okay? You're not Zeus. It apparently we have enough energy that we can manipulate the less dense clouds. These
right.
are the cumulus clouds. Look for clouds with soft edges, okay? All right? You want to pick a day where there's a good amount of blue space visible between clouds, maybe a 50% area of blue space to clouds, maybe even a little more sky, okay? That's the first thing. Then you have to pick a day when there is no wind. The wind will interfere with the game. It'll make the job of cloud busting pretty much impossible. Plus, you won't know if the wind is moving the cloud or you're doing it.
That's right.
Okay? So you're gonna pick a day where the clouds are pretty much just hanging in the sky. Find a cloud that looks like it's not going anywhere. Okay? Find a cloud that maybe is surrounded by clouds, other clouds. One that you could probably cover with your outstretched hand. Okay?
Gotcha.
If you're trying to figure out size, some people need a little guidance. So hold your hand out at arm's length and then find a cloud that'll hide behind your hand, as the outstretched palm of your hand.
Gotcha.
Okay? You click your amygdala forward and you visualize the energy coming up through your body, okay? Coming up through your spinal cord into your reptile brain, going through your mammal brain into your frontal lobes, and like a tube of energy, you just point it like a laser beam at that cloud and imagine that it's heating up the area of that cloud, and that causes the water vapor to turn into gas and to dissipate and disappear.
All right, so you're trying to project heat. Is that correct?
Not necessarily heat. That's one way you can do it. Okay, you can project the heat and imagine that may be actually how it's happening. You can project it like heat, or you can just visualize blue sky where you now see cloud. Just visualize the cloud disappearing. You're going to be projecting yourself 3 minutes, 5 minutes into the future where there is no cloud at that space where you're looking at. And that's it. And you just wait. And it will happen. And it will blow your mind. If you've never done this before, often it works the very first time. I got email from someone today, and they said, I've never tried this, but I read your thing.
Do you have an email address you can give out?
Yes. It's neilslade@hotmail.com.
Neilslade@hotmail.com.
And But like I said, someone wrote to me and he said, I've never tried this. I've never heard of it. I went out to show my wife and I did it and I couldn't believe it.
All right. Now, everybody feel free to go out and try this experiment. Now we're going to move on from this, and I have some big questions for you.
Okay.
Neil, what if hundreds of thousands or millions of people concentrated on a larger event?
I think, yes.
What would happen? Could it be, in other words, is the effect magnified with many brains?
We don't know that. And that is what I was hoping that we would explore tonight. We have, this is really, as far as I can tell, we can do something tonight that has never, ever been attempted in the history of the planet. We have, what do you have, 15 million or more people listening right now?
Yep.
Okay. Now, we know there's a tradition of rainmaking in the Native Americans and in many Native cultures.
I know.
There's actually, I even put a link on my, if you go to the cloud busting page on my site, I brought up, I did a link to an article about Indians in the Amazon. It was in either the Amazon or, I think it was in the Amazon, where they were having fires and absolutely no rain. And just two Indians, two medicine men, went and they did a ceremony. And within 24 hours, they had a colossal downpour of rain in the area where there had been absolutely no rain.
Mm-hmm.
So that's two people. Now, what would happen if we had, let's say, 1% out of that 15 million that did this? Or what if we had 50% of the people listening right now?
Well, we can probably get something in the order of about 20%, but that's still a whole bunch of people.
That's a lot of people.
What would you like to attempt?
Well, I talked with some friends of mine about this, and we were trying to think, you know, we came up with a couple of things. One, if we're going to do this, there has to be a need for it. We're not trying to do a trick. We're not trying to do entertainment.
I understand.
We're trying to help an area that needs help.
Now, we should be very cautious here because, we don't know exactly what we're doing. Now, if we produce a very great deal of energy and cause an effect, we have to imagine the possibility that what we produce that is positive for one area might be negative for another area.
Yes, and I think that's the danger with weather manipulation. The real way to manipulate the weather is not this little Band-Aid patch work. The reason we're having trouble with the weather, in my opinion, is because we're cutting down forests. We're paving every square inch of grass.
I wouldn't disagree with that. Yeah.
We are multiplying like bacteria in a Petri dish uncontrolled. We're throwing pollutants into the air. We're destroying the ozone. We are concentrating too much on getting toys and goodies as opposed to having fun with each other in ways that don't destroy the environment.
All right, but having said all that, again, coming back to the experiment, obviously there are tremendous fires going on in Florida. There has been some rain relief. They've been able to catch up with it a little bit, but they could use a whole lot more rain in Florida.
This is the area that we sort of came up with that we think we should work on. Now, I don't know if this is going to work. This could be, you know, for some reason, you know, I look at the Earth as an organism. And, you know, when you're sick and you've got a virus, you get a fever to burn out the virus.
That's correct.
Maybe the Earth is saying, maybe the Earth as an organism is saying, well, all these people in Florida have a virus. Maybe I can burn them out and get them out of this area. And
They are not viruses. They are listeners.
Yes, I understand.
And they're also very threatened little listeners right now.
What the point I'm trying to make, is that we don't know exactly why weather happens. And what we may perceive as a negative may in the long run be a way that will encourage people to dig deeper into themselves.
Well, look, I'll try anything. So I do want to try this. How would you suggest we do it?
I think if we pick a smaller area, and I believe this is the northeastern coast of Florida that's been hardest hit.
That's correct.
Is that correct?
That is, yes.
And I put up on my web page the satellite picture of Florida, and there's no clouds in that area right now. Okay?
Okay.
Now, you can make clouds vaporize, but you can also make clouds condense.
Now, is the process different?
Not very much. And if you give me like 2 minutes, I can probably lead all the listeners through this.
All right, all you little potential rainmakers out there, listen up.
We'll do it.
Go ahead, Neil.
Okay. We'll do this in two steps. Okay? We'll do the step that I'm going to go over with everyone live. And then when people tonight turn their radio off and go to bed, before or as they're falling asleep, I want them to repeat the same process. And perhaps even in the morning and throughout the day,
yes,
you can repeat the process. That way, we're really taking it seriously, and we're putting more and more positive
energy. Oh, I take this very seriously.
Energy. So what I'm saying is, you know, let's do this for the minute or two here now, but also, whenever you think of it, over this next 24-hour period, also continue to do it. And I think that increases our chances of success here.
Right. Look, cooperation and attention spans are short. We're about a minute and a half away from a break. During this break, the next 5 minutes, when the news is on, they don't need to hear it anyway.
Okay.
What can they do?
Okay. Click your amygdala forward.
Right.
Okay. You might even want to face the direction of Florida from wherever you are.
Okay.
Okay.
I'm generally faced that way now.
All the energy in the universe is coming to you. It's landing at your feet. It's coming in all your senses. It's entering through your eyes, your ears, even your taste buds. Okay? So you have an energy flow into your body. Direct the energy flow to your amygdala. Click it forward. Click it out of your frontal lobes and send it up into the air. And as it enters into this super collective consciousness, let it merge with the energy, the positive energy of all other 15 million listeners. Okay? Right now, we've got 15 million people thinking the same image. Okay? We are all telepathically merging our collective consciousness right now. We're going to move that positive energy, because it's positive, constructive energy,
yes,
since it's coming out of the frontal lobes. And imagine that with your hands, we have a giant set of hands over the state of Florida.
Yes.
And we're very gently condensing water vapor over the northeast corner of Florida. We're condensing the water vapor so that clouds form and that a good amount of useful, nonviolent rain falls on this part of the state. And motion with your hands, even.
All right, all right. We've got to hold it right there. Everybody, do that right now. I mean that. Face toward Florida, whatever direction it is from you, and do as Neil instructed. Let's try it now.
You're listening to Coast AM with Art Bell. Listeners west of the Rockies can call Art toll-free by dialing 1-800-618-8255. If you're east of the Rockies, the toll-free number is 800-825-5033. If you've never called Art before, you may use the first-time caller line at area code 702-727-1222. And the wild card line is area code 702-727-1295. When you get through, let it ring, and Art will answer your call in order on the air. This is the CBC Radio Network.
From the Kingdom of Nye, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell. From east of the Rockies, call Art at 1-800-825-5033. West of the Rockies, including Montana, Wyoming, Colorado, and New Mexico, at 1-800-618-8255. First-time callers may reach Art at area code 702-727-1222. And you may fax Art at area code 702-727-8499. Please limit your faxes to one or two pages. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell. Now again, here's Art.
Once again, here I am. All right, listen to me very carefully. There are not that many times that I really want to jump into an experiment, but let us try it. No guarantee of success, but your cooperation might make it happen. It's a worthwhile experiment. You listen to Neil tell you how you can click your amygdala. Is that correct, Neil?
Yes. Yeah.
Forward, and you can do it just by thinking of it, imagining nothing of heavier than a feather. Think of it as a toggle switch and a very easy to throw one, and throw both these toggle switches forward, and then begin concentrating on condensing water vapor over the northeast part of Florida. Now you can go get a map and find out where Florida is if you wish, or no doubt if you are geographically semi-conscious, you know where it is. And so just imagine over the northeast part of Florida, water condensing, and let us see what we can do. All right? It'll just take a moment of concentration. Listen to a fax I just got. Art, Evelyn. Evelyn Paglini. Welcome home. The photo is you, Art, manifesting a shield of protection and the fact that you tapped into the God force in cosmic unconsciousness. Remember the tools we talked about, I do. With meditation, visualization, and the power of your mind, you can bring into the physical plane what you desire. Neil Slade is showing you a wonderful exercise that can give a person the proof to believe and also give the mind permission to do even more. The power of the mind is unlimited. Remember, we have always had these abilities. Now is the time to reawaken them. Great topic. When you have a chance, ask Ramona for the guided meditation visualization tape and try it out. I know you'll be able to quickly get into an alpha state. Signed, Evelyn Paglini. Right on, Evelyn. Right on. Now, let's give it a try, everybody. I'm very serious about this. Spend a moment and concentrate. Now, one other thing that I'm going to throw in, kind of a cog in the wheel here. Earlier tonight, somebody sent me a ghost photograph. Now, I've seen a few in my time, actually quite a few, and this is one of the more intriguing. It came without any documentation. It may not be real, but it is one of the most intriguing ghost photographs I have ever seen. It is now on my website. It is at www.artbell.com. That's A-R-T-B-E-L-L, no spaces, lowercase, www.artbell.com. It is the first item in the new section. It's a ghost photograph I just got. So without comment, I'm going to simply tell you it's one of the better ones I've ever seen. Go take a look. Your comments are welcome, and I'm sure there will be many. So now during these commercials, sit and concentrate, and let us see what we can do for the northeast part of Florida. It may not work, or it may. Well, okay. Here's Neil once again. Neil, welcome back.
While you were in the break, I thought of a couple other things that I believe will help.
Sure.
As you play around with your frontal lobes, you kind of make a game out of what you're trying to accomplish. And you try to do things coming in at a lot of different angles. So one thing that will also help in this is to use some other skills available in your frontal lobes. Okay? You want to use left brain verbal skills.
Mm-hmm.
You want to use right brain visual data as well. So here's how you do that, and this is how we can easily keep this thing going here for a day or two until they get some relief. And I really believe we can have an impact. I really can see cloud cover and rain coming down. Here's what I did. I just took a little piece of paper and an index card, and I did my little childlike sketch of the state of Florida.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and in the northeast corner, I drew a little heart because we're doing this with compassion and with love. Okay, and I colored it in with a little red pen, and then I put a cloud over that area of the state, and I wrote in the words for left brain, 10-inch rain, 10 inches of rain, because I read in the paper that's how much rain they need to put out the fires.
Okay.
So I have a right brain picture of a heart, and I even have a little smiley face, and then I've got little squiggly lines for rain, and then 10 inches of rain. Then on the card I wrote relief, the word relief. I wrote the word cool. I wrote the word Florida deserves rain. And, of course, these people and the state and the environment, they deserve relief, and they deserve to not have to suffer the consequences of this kind of disaster.
Now, the people in Northeast Florida are also listening to you tonight.
Yes.
We have heavy coverage there. How do they participate?
They will do exactly the same things, okay? They won't have to turn towards Florida because they are in Florida, okay? They just need to visualize it. They need to remind themselves, and this is really
important. Well, yeah, but they're in Northeast Florida, so what I'm saying is, if they're actually in the horridly affected area right now, do they concentrate more or less vertically?
Yes, they can walk into their backyard or front yard and visualize rain and the cloud being covered with the sky being covered with gray clouds and gentle rain coming down without any lightning, because you don't want to visualize lightning, because that could set more fires.
Gotcha.
So they can visualize exactly the same thing. The more ways you can visualize this happening, the more powerful the brain energy flow is. If you only think one thing, then you'll get one stream of energy. But if you can come at it from a lot of different angles, visualize water running down the gutters of the street. Okay?
Sure.
Visualize all the different things that happen when it rains. Visualize people walking in the streets of Florida with umbrellas. Visualize fire in a forest being put out by the rain. Follow what I'm saying?
I sure do.
Now, people all over the country, go in your yards, get out your hose, okay? And in your garden, make a little sketch of the state of Florida. And take your garden hose and sprinkle water over that. Okay, so you're making a model of rain falling over the state of Florida. You see what I'm saying?
A way to visualize.
Yeah, get some sticks and set them on fire, okay, and then put it out with the hose. And the whole time you're doing this, think state of Florida rain. See? So the more ways you can creatively and imaginatively think of doing this, the more energy you'll be coming into your frontal lobes that you'll be able to send out to the state of Florida. And as we're all coming at this from all over the country, it will all converge, and just like hands, it will condense the water vapor and cause it to come down.
I think it's a grand experiment.
And, you know, do this as you go to bed tonight, as you can visualize all these different things. Make a game out of it. Make it a fun game. Enjoy doing it. Think of how many things? Can you think of 6 things? Can you think of 10 different ways to visualize? How about a thermometer? Imagine the thermometer on the side of someone's house in Florida, and the temperature on the thermometer is going down as the cool rain hits. You see what I'm saying?
Oh, I see precisely what
right?
you're saying.
And
yes.
Let's do this. Let's not stop after tomorrow. Let's just keep going for a day or 2 days. And what you can do is, you can go to any one of the, there's lots of satellite pictures up on the internet. If you
oh, yes.
go to my site,
sure.
I've got the picture of what it looked at like at 11:30 p.m., the satellite picture over Florida this evening, or earlier this evening, and I'll leave that up there. And then you can compare that with the link that I have to the daily updated satellite picture.
Gotcha.
And as you look at the picture, visualize a big white cloud over the state. And that's how we'll be able to bring some relief and some rain to this area, just by using our creative, imaginative, cooperative, intuitive, logical frontal lobes. That's how you send the energy, and that's how you can do this. And
kind of hope it works.
I do too, and I you know, I'm looking forward to see what happens.
Let's say, just for the sake of conversation, that it works.
Okay.
Somebody just sent me a fax with the following question. Art, what if there was some sort of meteorite, large rock, headed straight toward Earth on a definite collision course? If all the people or the majority in the world got together and began to visualize this rock being knocked off course, do you think we could all generate enough brain power to do it?
Okay. So is that a question for me?
I think it is.
Well, you know, here's how I would answer that. Recently you had, I think it was Ed Dames on, and he predicted the solar flare that he felt would destroy life on the planet. And although I would say, well, maybe that's a possibility, I'm not going to buy it, because to me, that's a negative visualization. Okay? It exists, but that's not the one I'm going to visualize. What I say is that if enough people on the planet visualize positive energy, a positive energy field around the planet, then we can, it will be like a protective shield. And it's a very simple way to do this. When you go out your front door tomorrow morning, look up at the sun and say, "Thank you, sun." When you walk out on your front lawn, say, "Thank you, earth," and be appreciative of all that nature gives us, and with this tremendous gift of life on this planet. Look up at the sky and say, "Thank you, clouds." I have an interesting story. And by doing that, what you will do is you will put positive energy. And maybe if there is a solar flare in our future, maybe there's enough energy in enough people that maybe it couldn't stop it, but maybe what it will do is put enough buffer. Maybe it will delay it so that when it happens, the only thing facing the sun may be the vast Pacific Ocean. Or maybe it will reduce the effect of it. Or maybe it'll miss. Maybe it'll miss completely.
Yeah, no, any of that's possible, and I absolutely agree. Last night I discussed with James Redfield. Did you hear that program?
I can't recall.
I've
been listening pretty steady here. James Red, what was the subject?
He wrote Celestine Prophecy.
Oh, yes. I listened to that entire program. This was last night.
Yes, it was.
Yeah.
And you may recall some of the conversation that we had about negative predictions and prophecy.
Yeah.
And how it may cause, in fact, the end result may cause more people to become spiritual in a way that will help.
Yeah.
And I think that is absolutely true. And it's kind of something I've never really said on the air before.
Yes.
But I felt a need to say it because of the conversation last night. So I really believe that's true. The negative prophecy forces people into a spiritual thought, which is taking them in the right direction and actually may end up modifying some of these negative things that otherwise may happen.
Well, this is what George Green, when people used to come to his house 20 years ago and learn instant meditation, he would do two things. He would say, okay, first we're going to astral project into your future without meditation. What do you see? And he had this amazing ability that people would be able to astral project 10 minutes within walking in his front door. And people would go into the future and they would see the consequences, what their life was like if they just kept doing the same stupid kinds of things, and if they didn't meditate, or if they acted in selfish ways, okay? So he would deliberately say, okay, look at the dark side, okay? And then you say, okay, now let's look at it if you meditate for 10 minutes a day, okay? And if you change your life in this way, then what do you see? And then they saw the other side of the coin.
Can I interject something, and maybe you will have a word or two to say about this. And then at the bottom of the hour after the break, I want to go to calls. I've got to go to calls.
Okay.
But I want to say this. I have never had an out-of-body experience, but I think I just had one. I was in Paris, and I'm not going to be able to say words that are going to convey what I felt to you. But I was sleeping, ostensibly, kind of very lightly sleeping or not sleeping, and the damnedest thing happened. There was no warning. There was no humming. There was no paralysis. There was none of that baloney. I simply shot up out of my body to a high altitude, and I have never felt so ecstatic. So there are simply not words to describe what I felt at that instant. And I was so surprised. I was so shocked. I was so amazed that I woke my wife up, which she did not at that moment appreciate, to tell her about it. And even now, there is, believe me when I tell you, there is no way to convey to you words that would make you understand what I felt. It was such an ecstatic experience. It was such a sudden, instantaneous freedom, but it lasted a very, very short time. I simply, at the speed of, with an acceleration that you can barely imagine and no feeling of acceleration, you know, like the astronauts who get in the shuttle and blast off, they have big acceleration. I had acceleration without the physical feeling of acceleration. Now, that sounds strange, but it is true.
Oh, I believe you 100%.
Now, I don't know what happened to me, but I know something significant happened to me lying in that bed in Paris. And is that an out-of-body experience? Is that, what the hell is that?
I'm familiar with that, and actually that happens to me and to people who routinely, deliberately click into frontal lobes types of things. Just, this was either last night or the night before. And it happens a lot while you're in bed, and I can explain why that is. But you just, when you go to bed at night, what happens is you turn off a lot of your reptile brain.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? As you go to sleep, your reptile brain is on hold. You click off self-defense counterattack. You're extremely vulnerable. So all of these defenses that you walk around with during the day click off. And what happens to that energy, instead of going back, being diverted back into reptilian self-defense counterattack, then it's freed up, and it's allowed to then move forward into the frontal lobe.
Gotcha.
And
all
that's
right.
What happened.
All right, we've got to hold it right there.
Sure.
And, so let's hold it right there. In a moment, we'll be right back, and we'll begin taking calls. Neil Slade is my guest, and if you're still with us at this point, I'm sure that you have questions. You ought to have anyway. So we're going to open the lines, and we're going to begin to take calls. The power of the mind. What do you think? Unlimited? We'll be right back.
I've had enough of this continued rain. Changes are coming, no doubt.
To talk with Art Bell in the Kingdom of Nye, from east of the Rockies, dial 1-800-825-5033. West of the Rockies, including Montana, Wyoming, Colorado, and New Mexico, 1-800-618-8255. First-time callers may recharge at area code 702-727-1222. And you may call Art on the wildcard line at area code 702-727-1295. To recharge from outside the U.S., first dial your access number to the USA, then 800-893-0903. This is Coast to Coast AM from the Kingdom of Nye with Art Bell.
And my guest, of course, is Neil Slade. Some out there are probably screaming, "Oh, gee, what a bunch of bunk." I'm not one of those. And so I hope you will, A, participate in this experiment. B, it is noted the fires in Florida seem to be more under control than they were. But it is a worthwhile experiment. Let us try it. Then we can wonder about whether it worked, if it rains hard, and whether we did it or, you know, some other force did it. But we can try it. The other is, again, I posted a very, very intriguing apparent ghost photograph on the website without documentation. It was emailed to me. I got it to Keith and got it up. So I don't make any representations about it other than go take a look. It's damn interesting. One of the best I've seen in a while. All right, Neil Slade, back again. If you have a question for him, come now. We are now going to open the lines. Neil, are you there?
I am certainly here. Are you there?
You bet, at least in part. So here we go. First time caller line. You're on the air with Neil Slade. Good morning.
Yes. My question is, have you ever tried remote viewing?
To Neil?
Yes.
Neil, have
yes.
you? And what comments do you have on remote viewing?
This was one of the first things I learned at George Green's. We used to call it astral projection back then.
Okay.
And I can recall now reading books on that particular subject. And I did that some. And my experience was that sometimes I was more accurate than other times.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I have a friend close by, and when she clicks her amygdala forward, and gets into her frontal lobes, she does remote healing sessions. And she recently did this, she does different kinds of physical therapy, and if she can't get somewhere, she will also do this remotely, okay? And she recently told me a story of contacting a woman in Wyoming whom she had never been to her house before, but they had set up a time to where this woman would receive this remote healing. And so she did she projected to this woman's house. She found herself inside the house. She looked around the living room, and she looked in the bedroom where this woman was supposed to be lying down in her bed.
Right.
And the woman wasn't there, according to her remote viewing. So she had to look around this house, and she saw a few objects. She saw a rocking chair, and she saw a pot of flowers or something. And then she found the woman doing yoga in a recreation room, okay?
Okay.
Now, according to the plan ahead of time, she was supposed to be lying down in bed at this appointment time so she would be healed. Well, anyway, she found the woman doing yoga. At least she thought she was in her viewing, and she went ahead and she did the light body work that she does. Well, then when she talked to this woman a couple days later on the phone, turns out that's what the woman was doing. She said, "Oh yeah, that's right. That night, I forgot that I was supposed to be in bed and I was doing yoga." And she also confirmed the location of several of the objects that the woman had seen in her remote healing. So that pretty much confirms.
So not just remote viewing, but remote healing.
The remote viewing almost was, there was a side thing that happened as a, she didn't go there to remote view. It wasn't for entertainment or just for the health.
No, I understand.
She went to heal the woman, And in the process, you know, she looked around the house with the remote, you know, astral projection, and it was accurate. And she had never been there before in her life, and she had just met the woman, so.
All right, there you are. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Neil Slade. Good morning.
Good morning, Art.
Where are you?
I'm calling from Valley, Nebraska.
Okay.
Hi.
Hi, Neil.
How are you doing?
I'm fine. It's such a pleasure to hear this type of topic.
Thank you.
One question I have is, how does this type of ability relate to dream control and astral travel?
Okay, we kind of were moving in that direction anyway. Is there a relationship? Obviously, there is.
Yes. Oh, okay. Well, as I was saying before, when you go to sleep, a couple things happen. One is you turn off. You never turn off your reptile brain all the time, because your reptile brain controls your heart and your breathing and your autonomic nervous system. It does. It controls all the stuff that you don't have to be bothered to think about, that keeps your circulation going.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Right.
So while you're sleeping, that those functions are still awake. But the other increased functions, fight or flight responses, those are turned off generally while you're sleeping, unless you have a nightmare.
Right.
Okay, and then those will flash on and off, and you will wake up in the middle of the dream, and your heart will be racing. But most of the time, most of us, when we dream, we click out of reptile brain, we go into frontal lobes circuits, okay, and we connect on all different kinds of levels, and the energy is diverted to our sleeping. I look at dreams in a couple of ways. One function of dreaming is to fulfill psychological needs that aren't being met during our waking life, and our frontal lobes can do that. And we found that that experiences that we have in our mind, okay, the psychological and neurological effect of dreams, daydreams, visualizations,
mm-hmm.
has the exact same neurological effect on memory and other types of body functions as the actual events. Okay?
Fascinating, yes.
So when we dream certain things that we have a psychological need for, it keeps us in balance. The other function of dreams, since we're going in our frontal lobes, it allows us to project somewhat into precognitive fields, and we can get a feel for events that are likely to happen in the future. So while you're dreaming, you will get hints, you will get warnings, you will get suggestions of directions that you should go, that normally during your waking consciousness you filter out, or you're not able to access because you've got all these reptilian circuits on.
I'm with you all the way.
Okay.
The name of your book again is?
It's The Frontal Lobes Supercharge.
All right. And you can get it, folks, by calling one of two 800 numbers. I'm going to try and repeat now. Check me if I'm wrong.
Okay.
One of them is 1-800-362-1670. And by the way, is that a 24-hour number?
That's a 24-hour number. It will probably fill up tonight if it's busy or...
Yep. So keep
trying. Keep trying. You'll get through.
That's 1-800-362-1670
or
1-888-682-7717.
That's correct. And, of course, you can just send $12.95 to me in the mail.
Mm-hmm.
That's P.O. Box 6799, Denver, Colorado, 80206, and the prices include all postage.
Denver, Colorado, the zip code again, please?
80206.
80206. Got it. All right, good. Let's move on. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Neil Slade. Hello.
Hello. I'd like to say hi to Mr. Bell and Mr. Slade. This is Sasha. I'd like to thank you, Mr. Bell, for putting on this program, because it's been a very joyous thing over the past 2 years when I've listened to it. Me and my grandmother, my brother, and my mother have listened to it over the 2 years, and I think you have very amazing guests and programs. And the question is for Mr. Slade is, how far have you gone with this? I mean, what have you done?
That's a good question. We've talked about cloud busting. Have you gone beyond that, Neil?
Well, you know, to be perfectly honest, I concentrate on music. I am a composer and a musician primarily by career.
Right.
So for me, although, you know, there are these what may sound like fantastic abilities to that one can access of changing the weather and telepathy. I mean, I let those things just happen when they happen. For me, if I can sit down and play a song on the guitar, to me, that's the best thing that I can do. If I can create music, or if I can do a painting, or if I can create a book, to me, that's the culmination of all the work.
So you're actually using this ability for creative enhancement.
Creating, yeah, right. I mean, you know, it all fits together in one big, you know, strawberry pie or whatever.
Sure.
But for me, you know, eventually you come back to just really enjoyment of the simple things in life. And you don't have to do magic every day. Just taking my dogs for a walk is the most glorious, magical thing I can do. And so when you say, how far have I taken it, the furthest anyone can take it is to enjoy life every single day. That's the best gift that you can have.
I've got you. All right. First time caller line, you're on the air with Neil Slade. Hi.
Hello?
Hello.
Okay. Yeah, excuse my voice. I'm having throat surgery here pretty quick.
Sorry to hear that. I hope it goes well. Oh, where are you, sir?
I got a question for Neil Slade. I just started listening to your program.
Hold it. Where are you?
I'm in Arizona.
Arizona, okay. You've got a question. Fire away.
Yeah, I was raised very open-mindedly about the subjects you're talking about tonight. And I experienced during my childhood, and I never really got into it, my mother and my sister used to do energy transference. And my sister also has I'd call a gift to see the aura around your hand.
Yes.
Like, and also into another realm or dimension or another inner consciousness where she can see even another world, she said, just by shifting her eyes. Have you ever heard of such a thing of energy transference, of drawing off of one another and people who are even seeing their aura?
Well, I've not only heard of that, but I've heard of psychic vampires and a lot more, Neil.
Yeah. That reminds me of something that Carlos Castaneda used to write about, and when he talked about shifting. And one thing I've noticed that people, when they click into their frontal lobes, the world looks different.
Mm-hmm.
You see, you pick up things that everybody else is missing. A friend of mine, she clicked into her frontal lobes one day, and she's walking through the campus of Metropolitan State College of Denver, and there were dozens of people there, and she spotted a $20 bill just sitting on the sidewalk. She picked it up. She says, who does this belong to? Nobody claimed it. No one else saw it.
Now, there is a miracle.
Okay?
I mean, when you hold it up and say, whose is this?
Who is it? No one claimed it. She was clicked into her frontal lobe, so her perceptions, when you click into more advanced cooperative parts of your brain and out of self-defense counterattack, your peripheral sensitivity is 10 times that of a person who is clicked into their reptile brain. So, you know, that's one way to look at this shifting and seeing.
Well, I'd like to see you try that same experiment in Las Vegas, maybe on a crowd in the Strip somewhere. All right, Wild Card Line, you're on the air with Neil Slade. Hello.
Hello, Art.
Hi.
I had a question. I had this experience. I'm from Ohio.
Yes, sir.
Yes, I had this experience. I was in school, and I went to this vending machine to get something to eat. I know it sounds kind of silly, but I didn't put any money in it or type anything in. And I wanted Funyuns, and it said dimes only, and I had dimes and some other miscellaneous change, and I was upset, and I looked up, and all of a sudden, the spring just moved and dropped the Funyuns, and I was so amazed.
You're kidding.
That's fantastic.
It is fantastic. That's an incredible story. That really happened.
Yeah, it really happened.
You swear on a stack of fast food.
I swear on a stack of fast food.
There you go. He connected.
Swear to God.
All right. Now, you know what? I had a fax. I'm getting a million faxes. I had a fax a little while ago who said, tell Neil Not only does it work, but I have used it to get this, Neil, to get parking places.
Oh, yes, yes.
Really?
I have this on film.
What?
This is a really funny story. I got to tell you this. Now, this is comes from a friend of a friend, and she took, now, if you're a Scientology person, that's cool, okay, whatever works for you. But
yeah.
This one person spent like $3,000, $4,000 taking Scientology classes for years.
Yes.
She got through with it, and she says, you know, I didn't get anything out of it except for this one thing. I learned in Scientology that there's always a parking space for you.
Yeah.
So whenever I go downtown and I need a parking space, I have a mantra, and the mantra is L. Ron Hubbard, L. Ron Hubbard. And as long as I say that, I get a parking space. So I started doing that. I swear to God, whenever I need a parking space,
you got L. Ron Hubbard?
I do L. Ron Hubbard. And we actually have it. We went downtown one day. We were doing a film, and the parking spaces were jammed. So as a joke, I just, on camera, I started saying, L. Ron Hubbard. And at the 2 seconds later, this guy comes, waves us down in the street. He says, I'm leaving. He says, don't put any money in the meter. It's still good.
Oh, no, really?
So.
My God, that's as good as holding up the $20 bill and asking, whose is it, and not getting an answer.
So there you go. Yes, you can get parking spaces with meditation or just by saying L. Ron Hubbard.
L. Ron Hubbard.
Maybe there's a mantra for Funyuns.
Well, I've got one for you. Next time you want to see an odd or unusual light in the sky or something even manifestly more profound, chant Art Bell.
That may work.
Sorry, I just couldn't resist. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Neil Slade. Hello.
Hello.
Hello, we can barely hear you.
I'm sorry.
Oh, talk into the phone. That's, you know, the mouthpiece there. It'll be fine.
Okay.
Where are you?
Gentryville, Indiana.
Okay. Speak up good and loud. Do you have a question?
Yes. I hope I dialed the right number.
Well, I hope you did, too. I mean, you're not wanting to order a pizza, right?
No.
You're wanting to be on the air with Art Bell and Neil Slade, right?
Absolutely.
Well, bingo then.
Well, first of all, during the break a while ago, I tried the visualization, and it was so neat because I kind of felt like I kicked out of my body. And then I kind of came to myself, and you all were talking again.
Uh-huh.
So I don't know if I got to, like, first base or what.
It sounds like, you know, when you start thinking of, when you start going outside yourself, when you start connecting with what does someone else need, what does, you know, when you get out of the me circuits,
mm-hmm.
you literally go somewhere else.
Thank goodness, Ted.
young lady, can I ask you to hold on through our break?
Yes.
It's our nickel. And Neil, hold on for a moment. I've got a couple of things that I've got to get on. One is, if you would like a copy of this program, it obviously is going to be a four-hour program. You can get it by calling 1-800-917-4278. Now, that number applies to any guest we have on the air here. Again, the number, 1-800-917-4278. That's a 24-hour number. You can use it right now. Secondarily, there have been a couple of articles about this radio program, one in the current issue of Newsweek. It's, in fact, longer than a page in Newsweek, in the current issue of Newsweek. And the other is a rather extensive article, 4 pages long, in Penthouse. Now, I know you only pick up Penthouse for the articles anyway, so in this case, pick up Penthouse, the August edition, and you will find quite an extensive story on this program, Penthouse and Newsweek. I'm Art Bell. This is Coast to Coast AM.
To Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell. Listeners west of the Rockies can call Art toll-free by dialing 1-800-917-4278. 618-8255. If you're east of the Rockies, the toll-free number is 800-825-5033. If you've never called Art before, you may use the first-time caller line at area code 702-727-1222. And the wild card line is area code 702-727-1295. When you get through, let it ring, and Art will answer your call in order on the air. This is the CBC Radio Network.
With Art Bell in the Kingdom of Nye from outside the U.S. First, dial your access number to the USA. Then, 800-893-0903. If you're a first-time caller, call Art at 702-727-1222. From east of the Rockies, 1-800-825-5033. West of the Rockies, including Montana, Wyoming, Colorado, and New Mexico, call Art at 1-800-618-8255 or call Art on the wildcard line at area code 702-727-1295. This is Coast to Coast AM from the Kingdom of Nye.
It certainly is. Neil Slade is my guest, and this is irresistible. It's a fax that just came in. Coincidence, or could it be working? Art, I captured the current weather conditions for Daytona Beach, Florida, which is one of the affected areas, both at 12:30 a.m. and at 1:30 a.m. our time. There does seem to be some condensing of water occurring, as you can see. I also looked at the Doppler radar maps for the area, and at both times, a green dot, which was not, repeat, not in the 12:30 a.m. photo, has now appeared in the 1:30 a.m. photo in northeast Florida. Coincidence? Steve in Portland. Weather report for Daytona Beach, Florida, updated at 3:30 a.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 7898. Temperature? 74 degrees Fahrenheit. Wind, 3 miles per hour south-southwest. Relative humidity, 95%. Current conditions, haze. Weather report for Daytona Beach, Florida, updated at 4:30 a.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 7898. Temperature, 74. Winds, 4 miles per hour. Now from the south. Relative humidity, now 96%. Current conditions, light fog. Oh, my. Well, if this works, we'll try it again elsewhere. Okay, back now to Neil Slade, and thank you for holding Neil and the nice young lady who was on the air with us. You're back on the air again.
Yes, I'm still here.
Okay, good.
And I wanted to apologize to you when I first came on. I was turning off fans because my husband's snoring in the other room and I couldn't hear you. He says I'm an Art Bell nut. I think he's right.
Well.
But I love you.
Thank you.
Okay, anyway, what I'd also like to ask Neil, is this, I'm left-handed. Is there a difference or an enhancement to left-handed compared to right-handed people?
I recall reading something about this in one of Lingo's journals many years ago. I'll tell you what I know to be true. The right side of the brain controls the left side of the body's motor functions. There's a crossover.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Your left eyeball, for example, the optic nerves go to the left side. No, the left side eyeball goes to the right side of the brain to be computed, and vice versa.
Mm-hmm.
Left-handed people, I'm trying to remember now what his journal writings were, tend to be more right brain dominant. If you're right-handed, you're more left brain dominant. Is it what I'm saying making sense?
Yes.
Okay. If you're left-handed, you tend to compute more visual, nonverbal, spatial, nonlinearly types of. You tend to process things in that function because those are right. Those are primarily right brain types of functions.
Mm-hmm.
Since there's a crossover, that's what your left-handedness shows. That you're more of an artistic type of person. Most of us who are right-handed tend to be left-brain dominant. So we're very verbally oriented or linearly oriented. As you do your brain work and you start to play with your brain, what you do is you balance things out so that you don't become, that you become brain ambidextrous. So you
right.
can deliberately click from either being left brain dominant or right brain dominant. But the left handedness, right handedness just shows a slight predisposition towards one side or the other.
Well, I can also use my left hand as well as my right, except I have to write left handed. And, I a while ago, whenever I was thinking, it just seemed like, you know, like sometimes you'll kind of slip off into sleep. But this was more of a kick. I mean, I just got jumped out of my bed. And it was so funny because I thought, gosh, that's never happened before.
Yes, well, I recently also had a very similar experience. Thank you very, very much. That was a good good question. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Neil Slade and Art Bell. Hi.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello. Yeah, this is Kevin from Golden, Colorado.
Golden, hi. Yay.
Right. We're next door. We're right next door to you, buddy.
Yeah.
But,
well, you know, Lympho Brain Lab was about... You ever go to Blackhawk?
Yeah, I used to work up there. But
yeah, well, the Lingo's Brain Lab was located about 10 miles outside of Blackhawk, but at 10,000 feet altitude. So the Brain Lab was pretty close to right in between Golden and Blackhawk there.
Oh, that's interesting. Right next door to me.
Yeah.
But, all right, I've been listening to you for about 2 weeks, and I can't stop. I've been up every night listening to you.
A two-week listener, huh?
I'm on a roll here.
All right.
But first thing, I was trying to tap into the rain thing in Florida, and when I was really tapped in, I felt like my eyes were shuddering, like I was in a REM sleep type of deal. That actually wasn't my question. My question was, let's say that you have a job or you're in particular sports. Or that you just happen to be in a reptilian brain mode more often than somebody else.
This is going to be a good question, I can tell.
Would this affect how deep you can get into your frontal lobe consciousness, or is this just like a switch?
I can even make it a better question. If you begin, if you're in this reptilian mode most of the time, because you have that kind of job, you're an NFL player, whatever, who cares? And you begin doing what you are suggesting, Neil, would you then compromise your ability to function in that reptilian mode? Ha-ha.
Yeah, I know what you're saying. Actually, when you're trying to succeed at something, the more frontal lobes you use, the better your chances are succeeding. For example, okay, football players, okay?
Okay.
Now, everybody's certainly going to be in reptilian competitive mode,
yep.
A certain degree.
Yep.
But the team that wins, the quarterback who does the best job is the one who's using more frontal lobes, the one who can see the future,
yes.
Who can imagine, like a chess game,
yes.
All the possibilities, right? The one who can come into that reptilian sport with the most amount of intelligence is going to do an end run around all those people who are only using 1% of their frontal lobe.
All right, but let's not talk about the quarterback. I see where you're driving there, and you're absolutely right. Let's talk about the guy who is sitting up on the line, and his job is to crush and possibly break the bones of the guy on the other side the minute the ball is snapped. What about that guy?
Well, I probably, you know, what's going to, if you're talking about someone who has a less thinking kind of
job.
More.
Yeah, I am, yes.
Yeah. His performance is probably going to be related very much so to things that he does mentally while he's doing that.
Well, generally, mentally, he's sitting there thinking, kill, 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 gritting his teeth, staring at the other guy, thinking your mother wears combat boots and worse.
Yeah, right. He won't perform as well as someone who has clicked more into his frontal lobes, although you would sort of think would be the opposite. Because what he wants his body to perform at the at its highest potential, correct?
Right.
Okay. Now, when you are clicked into reptilian brain and you are in survival mode and negative thinking, this has an adverse effect on your physiological function.
Okay, but the question was, if you were to do the exercises you are talking about, would it possibly compromise his ability to function in the reptilian manner, which he has to do to be successful?
No, I don't think so. You know, look at World War II. You know, the people who won the war were the ones who were better organized, better cooperative, had a better view of
it's true.
Of helping people.
It's true.
The good guys won. Okay? The people who were more thinking about the other person, who were more loving, they had to go in and fight like hell, but they did it in a manner that was to help elevate mankind. And so they were better reptiles, as it were.
Huh.
They were able to beat the lesser functioning reptiles.
Oh, good analogy. Very good. First time caller line, you're on the air with Neil Slade. Hi.
Hello.
Hello.
I'm in Duluth, Minnesota, the southernmost tip of Lake Superior.
Oh, yes.
Firstly, I must say that your hole-punching technique did remind me of a document I read on the Internet regarding the cultivation of mushrooms, hallucinogenic mushrooms, psilocybin cadensis, or shrooms or whatever.
Yeah.
The author of that had said the first time he tried the said fungus, he was able to pick out which clouds in the sky would separate and which would stay whole. And I think he documented this on tape, too. And it's also worth noting that such hallucinogens, when ingested by a person, there's a certain amount of swelling in the frontal lobe, as with LSD and that. I was wondering if there was some sort of correlation.
Oh, yeah, there's a very – I know exactly how psychedelics and hallucinogens work.
Okay,
and,
well, then comment on it.
You know, and I heard your comment last night about that you felt there were many pathways.
Oh, yes.
And hallucinogens were one, and I'm in perfect agreement with you. If you go to central Mexico and you observe the mushroom cults and the curanderas, they've been doing this for thousands of years, and they don't have drug addiction down there. And these people use these hallucinogens in ways that benefit society. So this whole thing about, you know, I mean, and there are different classes of drugs. Somebody who gets...
And I am not, I don't want to encourage anybody to use a hallucinogenic, but generally hallucinogenics are not addictive in the sense that narcotics, our understanding of the way narcotics are
addictive.
Yeah,
the chemistry in the brain of tryptamine derivatives. And by that, we're talking about LSD and mushrooms, like the gentleman was just talking about. There's a certain class of chemicals. They can't be lumped together with chemicals like cocaine and heroin and opium. There's, you know, you can't generalize about drugs.
Right.
In terms of hallucinogens in particular, and we're talking about mushrooms and LSD, the way they work is this, and this is how it's connected to the frontal lobes, and why people, when they take these kinds of drugs, sometimes say, I see God, and they have these frontal lobes pop, and they feel like they're one with the universe, and they feel like they learn a lot of information. Your brain has a neurotransmitter called serotonin.
Right.
And what it does is it plugs into the mammal brain and into the gateways in the mammal brain, like at the thalamus and the amygdala and other. There's a lot of switches in there. And it regulates the flow of information to the frontal lobes, okay? If your frontal lobes were going full blast all the time, you'd never make it down to the supermarket because everywhere you would turn, God would be talking to you in little dust, you know, particles in the corner of your room.
Sure.
So we have to function on a daily basis, we have to filter out this information. And that's what serotonin does. It's a buffer. It's a filter. And when you take a psilocybin mushroom and you eat that, it has a chemical in it, psilocybin and psilocin, and they are very, very similar to serotonin. So what they do is they flood these gateway switches and they plug into the serotonin receptors,
mm-hmm.
and they block the serotonin action from happening. And what that does then is it allows more information to go through the gateway and go into the frontal lobes. And so colors seem brighter.
Oh, yes.
You start to perceive non-physical entities. You have telepathies that happen. You suddenly have amazing realizations. You see God in the coffee cup that you're drinking out of. And so you get, when you take these kinds of tryptamine-type drugs, it allows more energy to the frontal lobes. We see what's called cascading. You can take PET scans, and you can see it's like waves of energy going into the frontal lobes. And so that's what's happening when you take these drugs. But you have to be careful. Here's the problem with the hallucinogens. It's sort of like stoking up the fire in the brain. It's like turning your radio on full blast, okay? If you can keep your amygdala clicked forward, all that energy will go to your frontal lobes, and you'll be at one with the universe, and you'll have a good trip. However, sometimes the experience is so intense or it's so new to someone, they don't know how to deal with it, and it becomes frightening, and you click that extra energy back into your reptile brain, and then you have a bummer trip.
Yep.
Okay? So the main thing is if you find yourself predisposed to experiment with this kind of thing, the first thing you got to do is you've got to learn how to click your amygdala forward and click there, because if you take these chemicals and you click backwards, you're going to have a pretty horrible time.
And so it has occurred. Wildcard Line, you're on the air with Neil Slade. Hi.
Hi.
Where are you?
My name's Elizabeth, and I'm calling from Peoria, Illinois.
Well, welcome.
Well, thank you.
How's all this playing in Peoria?
It's playing very good. And you were talking about Las Vegas. That's where I went to graduate school.
How is it?
And when you said about the stop, the lights, I definitely experienced that. But I did have this is kind of my question. I had a car accident when I was in graduate school.
Right.
It was in 94, and it was on Jones and Lake Mead, and I suffered severe skull trauma.
Oh, boy.
And for about 6 months after that, all sorts of out-of-body experiences.
Mm-hmm.
I could look out the window. This particular one happened once. I looked out the window, and like a block down, I saw people, and I could actually hear what they were saying, but it wasn't like, it was like through my mind. And I jumped out of my body when I was sleeping to turn off my radio. Lots of things happened. Could my switches have got like stuck open for a while?
All right. Oh, that's a beautiful question. And I'll back it up by adding people who have had near-death experiences have also, for periods of time after them, acquired very serious psychic powers. When there's physical trauma, Neil, are these people suddenly, is something occurring in their brains that's throwing the switch?
It sounds like that. Now, I'm not a neurosurgeon, and I can't be any more specific than I've been. But when we're talking, you know, the way that we looked at all these paranormal activities at the brain lab, and the way I've come to look at them is we're not talking about philosophy. We're talking about actual electrochemical pathways. These are physical things.
So a physical trauma could indeed cause some changes in the routing up there.
Oh, it absolutely will.
All right, hold on, Neil. We're at the bottom of the hour. Again, to get a copy of this very informative program, you can call 24 hours a day. You're going to just want to say you want the Neil Slade program. 1-800-917-4278. We'll be right back.
Falling in love with you.
the Kingdom of Nye. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell. From east of the Rockies, call Art at 1-800-825-5033. West of the Rockies, including Montana, Wyoming, Colorado, and New Mexico, at 1-800-618-8255. First-time callers may reach Art at area code 702-727-1222. And you may fax Art at area code 702-727-8499. Please limit your faxes to one or two pages. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell. Now again, here's Art.
Once again, here I am. Good morning, everybody. Fascinating program underway with Neil Slade. We'll get right back to him. He's all yours. The early morning hours must do strange things to you. I was listening to that commercial. He said it was like sleeping on a cloud. And so I'm, you know, mentally picturing these people up there sleeping on a cloud. And then somebody like Neil Slade down on the ground dissipating the cloud. And like a Roadrunner movie, down they come. Hi, Neil. We're back on the air again, and a lot of people want to talk to you.
All right. You know, I would remind people, you know, what I did, I made a little index card with the state of Florida and my smiley faces and rain. I'm going to put one on my refrigerator, and I'm going to put one on the dashboard of my car and on my bathroom window. So I think about this constantly for the next day.
You did hear that change in weather report I read you, didn't you?
Yeah, I wouldn't surprise me if we see something in the next few hours. You just see a cloud appear over this thing. But, you know, you got to stick with it for something of that scale. You got to stick with it for a while.
You also have to scientifically verify it. So, in other words, if this occurs, if this seemingly works, then we've got to try it again in a different area under different circumstances.
Yeah.
And we've got to kind of build the case slowly, but it's fascinating. All right, first time caller line, you're on the air with Neil Slade. Hi.
Hi.
Where are you?
My name is Carl. I'm calling from Southwest Florida.
Okay, Carl, you're going to have to yell at us because you're not easy to hear. Go ahead.
Okay. I have a comment and a question. My comment is, ever since I was a little kid, I always believed that you could control the mind or the weather with your mind.
Uh-huh.
Growing up, I've always thought that. I always felt that I could do that. This is the first time I've ever heard someone say that you could actually do that and had proof.
Well, other shows would never talk about this kind of thing.
Yeah, I can't get on any other radio shows in Denver, so.
My question is, a couple of years ago I read a book called Autobiography of a Yogi.
Oh, yeah.
By Paramahansa Yogananda.
Uh-huh.
You talked about a part of the brain called the medulla oblongata.
Yeah. Yeah, I think.
Have you heard of that?
Yes.
Is that the part of the brain that you're talking about supercharging with chi?
Well, the medulla oblongata is an old term that they hardly even use anymore. Mm-hmm. But what that is that's part of the reptile brain, actually. And the reticular activating formation, I believe, is in that area. And that's where consciousness starts. When, you know, the reticular activating formation in that part of the brain, when you're asleep, it's switched off. Or if you're in a coma, it's on off. When you wake up in the morning, that switch goes on, and then you become aware of your environment. And it's like consciousness then leaves that area, and it goes up into the brain. The frontal lobes, where we're trying to activate and send the energy, is actually just the opposite part of the brain. So we're starting at that area, but then we're moving up and out into the front.
All right, caller?
Yes.
Okay, good. There you are. Wild card line, you're on the air with Neil. First-time callers, call area 702-727-1222.
Coast, Florida.
Okay, hold on a sec. You're not allowed to give your last name on the air, so we're going to have to start all over again. It's the only rule, we have no last name. So your first name is?
Mom, USA.
Okay.
In Florida.
In Florida.
Fires.
All right.
So my question is, if I'm right here with the Flyers, and I think really hard about this, along with everyone in Palm Coast,
right,
who are probably sleeping right now, so I don't think that's going to be highly effective.
They're dreaming of rain.
Pardon me?
They're probably dreaming of rain.
Oh, good. That's very reassuring. I'm having a hard time finding anyone to talk to at this hour, and I'm a night owl, and I'm keeping fire watch while my children and husband sleep.
Okay.
So I just had to take a ride to talk to a policeman to find out if we should be evacuating because you can't get anything on the news here. It's incredible. There's no phone number to call. So it's just been living in fear for the 2 days that we've been back from the first evacuation, and there's a fire a mile away from our house.
Oh, brother.
So my husband thinks I'm being paranoid because it was a beautiful day and there was no smoke and the wind must have been blowing the other way. And I'm saying, let's get the hell out of here because we were stuck in traffic for 8 hours trying to evacuate the other day. I have no faith in the authorities to keep me informed. And the evacuation effort really was unorganized, unprofessional. Emergency vehicles were roaring up and down the shoulders of A1A as we sat there in gridlock. You could get on the news, firestorm is happening, gridlock on A1A.
Mm-hmm. All right, well, we know how terribly serious the situation is, and I thank you for calling, and I don't blame you for staying up late. I suggest to you a lot of your neighbors probably are also up under these conditions, and I don't know that what we're doing will succeed. But I would should suggest, since you don't have anything else to do, apparently, you join us in trying to do what we're trying to do tonight, and that is create rain where you are. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Neil Slade. Hi.
Yes, this is Amy from Cincinnati.
Hi, Amy.
And I have two questions for you, actually.
All right.
The first is, I'm a performing musician, a conductor, and I was going to ask Mr. Slade, often when I get up to perform, I kick back into the fight or flight mode, you know.
Sure.
You can feel your heart racing, but I need to be using the frontal lobes.
Yeah.
And the chi, you know, to access in my conducting. And I was wondering if you had any suggestions to help me to do that consciously.
Right. Have you just started conducting?
No, actually, I've been conducting a while.
Yeah. I think what you can, you have to convert the fear into positive energy. And I've even heard from people like Jimmy Page, and he suffers from terrible stage fright. But he says, you know, what I do is I try to use that all that extra energy and channel it into positive energy that I can then share with the audience. So if you can visualize the all that nervous energy and clicking it forward and moving it out towards the audience and sharing that adrenaline rush and turning it around, just switching the gear. You take your amygdala, just like for a gear shift, and you it's clicked into reverse. You click it forward, and then you send the energy out forward. And if you also visualize using the imaginative parts of your frontal lobes, visualize the way you want it to be and keep that picture in your mind and write it down. Write down a scenario in a notebook and keep working on the visualization and reprogram your brain, and eventually what will happen is the physical reality will catch up with what you are constructing in your abstract synthesized frontal lobe spots.
Okay.
All right.
Well, my second question, briefly, is I started taking a medication that was mind-altering somewhat. It's a seizure medication.
Yeah.
Serotonin medication.
Yeah.
And at the same time, my perfect pitch suddenly became askew, and I rely on that heavily because I don't see very well.
Sure.
And I was wondering if there's anything I could do or anywhere you could suggest I go, because it's just incredibly frustrating.
Yeah. Well, you know, probably the prescription drug that you're taking is going to be altering the chemical pathways in your brain, and that's why you're noticing a change in brain function. You know, just because I'm a musician, I've seen ads in some of the musician magazines for training oneself towards perfect pitch. Now, previously, it sounds like you had a natural ability, but it sounds like you're going to have to retrain your brain to achieve this kind of pitch recognition through a different pathway. And you can do it. You know, you have lots of redundancy circuits in your brain. And I imagine it's probably going to be less difficult for you than somebody who never had the ability. So check out like a musician magazine or guitar player and look for David Burge has ads for learning perfect pitch. And I would suggest that. And I think you'll probably
be successful.
Fascinating. People can send you email. There are going to be a lot of people who want to ask you questions.
Yeah.
So let's see if I've got it right. It's N-E-I-L, Neil.
Yeah.
Slade, S-L-A-D-E.
It's one word.
Neil Slade, just one word, lowercase.
Yes.
N-E-I-L, S-L-A-D-E, at hotmail.com.
That's correct.
All right, good. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Neil Slade at Coast to Coast AM. Hello? Oh, I didn't push the button. Now you're on the air. Hi.
Oh, my gosh, what happened?
Well, I didn't push the button. Now I have. So you're
okay.
On the air.
This is Mary from Northern California near Chico.
Hi, Mary.
Hello there. And this is amazing. I have tried for over 2 years to call into your show with comments, questions, you know, hopping from one foot to the other.
Sure.
And tonight I said, I'm going to click my amygdala forward. And darn, if you didn't answer on about the second or third ring.
No kidding.
No kidding. It's amazing.
Well, there you go. There's what more proof. That's my case.
But I just had more of a comment than a question. And Neil, I'm delighted to hear you on Art again. I listened to your first show, and I emailed you then.
Are you out there?
Neil does a wonderful job of answering emails, and you get on his email list, and he sends you these absolutely delightful emails and updates.
Oh, well, thank you.
You're a sweetheart.
Are you Mary B.?
Yeah.
Oh, well, you know, I think part of your... Let's see, you're in the Supercharge book. I took an excerpt from one of your emails.
Well, cool.
Where you described what I believe was one of the results that you had from clicking forward, and it was such a good example, I put it in the book. So I should have sent you a free book.
outstanding. That was with the tarot cards, right? And the futures market?
Yes.
Yeah,
that's
and if
right.
anybody
well,
wants to know what that was all about, I'll have to buy your book.
Yes, that's right. That's right. That was a very good example.
Yeah, but I also wanted to comment that cloud busting, when you sent emails out about that, I said, by gosh, I forgot all about that. I first started doing that 30 years ago. And darn if it doesn't work.
It does. Doesn't it blow your mind?
Absolutely.
You think this is impossible, right?
Oh, yeah.
Then you go out and... 3 minutes later, the clouds are moving in the way that you're projecting. It's one of these weird things. We don't know why it works. You know, normally telepathic and paranormal abilities are not really at the whim of your ego.
That's right.
You know, they're more for when you really need them. But for, I think because this is such a harmless activity.
Mm-hmm.
That for some reason we're allowed to do this easily, and the first time it works for you, you go, it changes everything, your whole perception of your brain and how you are connected to the universe instantaneously changes.
Oh, it's amazing, and especially once you've discovered how to make them go away, then you make them come back.
Yes.
And then you start making shapes. It's
well, you know,
a lot of fun.
Now, I had never done that before, and on the video that I made, I noticed there was an area on the left side of the viewfinder, and I say, I've never done this before, but I heard you can do it. I'm going to try to make clouds move up and appear on the left side of the video. Now, the clouds were just perfectly stationary. 15 seconds later, a big cloud bank just goes whoosh, just like somebody pushed it up with their hand and fills in the left side
now
of the viewfinder.
Now, you've got, what, AVI files?
Those are actually GIF files. We made
GIF
this
files.
Snappy.
A series of GIF files.
There's a dozen, and you can watch that. And if you look at the last, the one that I'm talking about right now is the cloud busting video number one. And at the very last frame, you can see the clouds start to go up on the left side.
Huh.
And I didn't mention that on the page, but that's what's happening there.
All right, young lady, thank you.
Thanks, Mary. Nice talking to you.
Hey, I hope to hear you on Art again.
Thank you.
Take care.
Guys.
Bye. First-time caller line, you're on the air with Neil Slade. Hi.
Hi, my name is Ryan. I'm from Las Vegas.
Yes, sir.
I had a question. Most of the night I've heard about the mind affecting the weather, and I was wondering if the mind could affect other things, such as like volcanology or anything like that.
Well, that's a damn good question, and I don't know that I know the answer. I suspect if we can do one, then maybe the other would follow. What do you think, Neil?
I talked to a friend about this who had actually given this quite a bit of thought, and her feelings were that, you know, things, really heavy stuff like volcanoes and earthquakes, they're reflecting our consensus consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
If there's a big negative field being produced by our human consciousness, well, it's just going to reverberate in the Earth's crust. Now, if I live downhill from a erupting volcano, I would not sit there and think, volcano, stop. No, I'd get my ass out of there real quick. So I think there are limitations.
But maybe we don't fully understand what they are just yet.
Yeah.
What those limitations are.
Yeah.
And we have not tried large-level experiments of the sort that we are trying this morning. And if that were to work, then it might be worth trying some other increasingly difficult things.
Absolutely.
All right. Wild Card Line, you're on the air with Neil Slade. Hi.
Hi, this is Melissa calling from Portland.
Hello there.
Hi, good evening to both of you.
Hi.
I've had a question troubling me for a couple of years now. I had tried acid for the first time, and during that period, I watched the sun come up, and it was an extremely spiritual experience for me. I felt connected to the earth in a way I hadn't experienced before. And a couple of days after that, I was going on a walk with a friend, and I saw the sun go down in the exact same place I had seen it come up a few days before. And it bothered me. My rational mind couldn't explain it.
I saw it go down where it came up.
I saw the sun go down in the east instead of in the west.
Mm.
In the exact same place. And what troubled me the most about this was I could have dismissed it, I guess, as a flashback or as my mind still being altered, I guess.
Yeah.
But my friend who had not taken the drug with me saw it before I did even.
Huh.
And I've always just kind of gone back to that in my head to this instance, and I was wondering if you could give me any insight as to how both of us were able to see this strange thing when we were on such different wavelengths at the time.
Yeah. I don't really have an explanation for it. I do know, and I've had a fair amount of experience with the kind of substances you're talking about in the past. I had an experience where my friend and I both could read each other's minds at the peak of this kind of experience, and we stopped being two different people. We became one mind that was floating in the center of the room, and it was something I will never ever forget.
That's the same kind of experience it was for me. It stuck with me more than probably anything I've ever seen before in my life.
Yeah. So I our brain is just a cauldron of chemical, it's a chemical melting pot, you know? And, I mean, by changing our brain chemistry one way or another, we can have just a whole variety of experiences. And just because you may ingest, an outside chemical, it doesn't invalidate your experience at all.
Neil, I wish we had more time, but we don't. Guess what? Program's over and all that kind of stuff. It has been such a pleasure having you on the air. What an informative, interesting program.
Thank you very much.
And we will absolutely have you back. So good luck with all your email, my friend.
Thank you very much.
And until next time, because there will be one, good night.
All right. Good night, Art.
All right.
It's been an honor.
Good night. Sorry we ran out of time, folks. We could have gone on and on and on and on with this, obviously. To get a copy of this program well worth owning, you can call 1-800-917-4278. That is a 24-hour number and applies to any guest program that we do. It's 1-800-917-4278. Remember the experiment during the day today with Florida. Let us do our very best. Send out some good white light and do as Neil instructed. In the meantime, from the high desert, where it's hot, I'm Art Bell. Good night.